It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. Ooh, I have such a great panel for you. Devendra Hardawar from Engadget, Patrick Norton from TechThing, and you may know her as Callie Lewis, Luria Petrucci, to talk about her new Geek's Life. It's all coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. It's time for Twit's annual audience survey, and we want to hear from you. Please visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It only takes a few minutes, and your anonymous feedback will help us make Twit even better. We thank you so much for your continued support. twit.tv/survey. This is Twit This Week in Tech, episode 504, recorded Sunday, April 5th, 2015. Tell me I'm not a narcissist. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the easiest way to create a beautiful website, blog, or online store for you and your ideas. Go to squarespace.com and enter the offer code TWIT at checkout to get 10% off. And by Carbonite. For the hands-on business owner, Carbonite makes data backup hands-free. Carbonite's automatic cloud backup provides you with round-the-clock protection at work and at home. Visit Carbonite.com and use the offer code TWIT for 2 free bonus months. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. And by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use invoicing software designed to help small business owners save time billing and get paid faster. Join over 5 million users running their business with ease. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/twit. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech, the show where we talk about the week's tech news. And as always, a great panel of really my friends. I'm sorry to say, I don't ever really bring anybody who's not my friend here.
One would hope.
I'm looking at Patrick Norton right now. I love your T-shirt.
Thank you.
Learn something new. Sleep with a librarian.
My wife gave it to me.
Oh, I was going to say that's my life goal. Not to sleep with your wife. No, marrying
the
librarian.
Bang, out of the gate, ladies and gentlemen.
Right away.
A very special
Marrying the librarian and the music man. Librarians are attractive.
Look, more guests.
My grandma was a librarian.
That's not helping, Leo.
Okay. Devendra Hardawar is also here from Engadget. Great to see you, Devendra.
Thanks for having me back.
And I'm really thrilled to welcome back. She hasn't been on the show in quite a while, but I couldn't resist. You may know her as Callie Lewis, but she's really Luria Petrucci.
Hey.
Hi, Luria.
It's been forever.
Oh, I'm so glad to see you. And there's an occasion. We wanted to get you on to talk about your new enterprise, geekslife.com.
Thanks for having me.
And if everybody would refrain from going to that website right now.
Yeah, just in the pre-show, you took it down, Leo. You still have the power.
I think whoever's working for you flipped some switches because it's back up and it's
good.
Great. This is where you're going to do your new podcasts. You've got already, out of the gate, you've got 8.
Yes. So Geek's Life is a lifestyle channel. And you know, to me, geek has always meant passion. It's always meant something you're passionate about. And I'm passionate about technology, as we all are here in this studio, in this show, in the audience. But I wanted a place to embrace my other passions as well, which is outdoors and stand-up paddleboarding and music. And I think as people, you know, we are all passionate about various things, and I wanted a community that was able to embrace everything and be comfortable being ourselves.
Fun.
So, I'm thrilled about this. We're going to have fun with all of it.
And
me too.
So go to geekslife.com, and then we should explain. I've known Luria for many years, more than 10, and I knew all along, I think most people, maybe most people did, that your real name is Luria Petrucci. Callie Lewis was a creation, an invention.
Well, the name itself was kind of just an alias because for whatever reason, I thought early on when I started this whole video thing online that people had butchered my name my entire life. And I thought, well, maybe I need more of an American name. And
you were, but it was also a spy, right? You were like a character that was a spy and...
Yeah, it was like I was like the head of the Geek Intelligence Agency and some silly super backstory to this whole thing when I first started doing shows online. And, you know, that was just kind of creation. Yeah. But with this whole venture,
when you do stuff like that, it sometimes sticks. And in your case,
I know, right? It's stuck, and I didn't really intend it to, and I didn't know that this would all turn into what it has. And I realized over the last year that I really want to be doing this for the rest of my life, and I want to embrace me for who I am, and I want people to be embracing of themselves. And some stuff in my personal life with I found love, and that helped me learn to just be comfortable with me.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about the love stuff in a second, but I'm glad to hear that. but I remember going through that same thing because when I got in radio, I had the same notion. Oh, you're not supposed to use your real name. So I was Dave. I don't remember anymore. Dave Allen, and then I was Dan Hayes.
Wow.
And then
John Smith.
Yeah, practically. It wasn't until I started working in San Francisco that my program director, I said, could I use my real name? He said, what's your real name? I said, Leo Laporte. He said, you cannot use that. So I said, well, it's spelled like Leo. He said, use that. So I had to go through very much what you're going through in my own mind. Nobody ever heard of me, so it wasn't the same issue that you have of people saying, well, who's Luria? Yeah. So from now on, everybody who's watching, we're going to call you Luria. This is the name. This is her name.
And, you know, it was a scary thing for me to kind of start to embrace that just because of 9 years, you know, and a lot of people have told me 9 years worth of Callie Lewis brand equity.
Yeah.
But the audience, it actually was a complete mistake to really switch over to it because I just did a behind the scenes video when I opened up Geeks Life and it was just kind of talking a heart-to-heart conversation with the audience. And I used my real name and said, you might know me as Callie Lewis. And then from then on, everybody was like, you're using your real name. You have to. I love it.
I love your real name.
I was like, okay.
You're a nice Italian girl.
Exactly.
We've talked about your grandma and making ravioli and all that stuff. So
yeah, I make homemade pasta. So you'll probably see that on the show at some point.
Yeah. Anyway, congratulations on the new venture. Congratulations on going back to your real name. I've always thought of you as Luria, so I'm going to call you Luria.
No, I appreciate that.
It's really great. Really great to have all three of you. Happy Easter. I appreciate you working on a holiday, but the tech news goes on.
Strangely enough.
Always.
Friday, we're going to be able to buy or at least order Apple Watches, 1201, according to some anyway. I don't know if Apple's announced this yet. 1201 Pacific AM on Friday, April 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to get in? Patrick, you don't look like you're going to get in. You don't look like an Apple Watch wearer, to be honest with you.
I haven't worn a watch. Yeah. I started working at magazines.
They make them that big.
No, actually, it's funny. I usually am on the last, on all the smartwatches I've tried, usually the second to last or last band sort of notch will fit me.
I never noticed this, but you have massive wrists.
I have massive wrists. I could be a heavyweight boxer if I wanted to be because I actually have the frame to support the punch,
right? I never noticed that.
It's most people don't really look at my bone structure, Leo. That's okay. But it's funny. I mean, you mentioned that, right? Because I don't wear... when I started typing for a living at magazines 1,000 years ago, I realized I had wrist pain and I took the watch off and the wrist pain went away. So I stopped wearing watches and went back to using pocket watches.
Yeah.
And then I started carrying a phone and I stopped carrying a pocket watch. And now I need to test the Apple Watch and I'm kind of like, I'm going to I can get the $350 one. I'm going to shatter the screen. I'm not going to be able to replace the screen. And then I'm going to be really pissed off because the Apple Care is astonishing. Watching the way they're introducing this is so interesting, even for an Apple product. So I think like one of the first stories you had up on the list today was like Apple Care Plus. Okay, I can afford the Apple Care Plus for the sport watch, but it's $1,000 for the edition watch.
Wait a minute. If you spend $10,000 for a watch, it's only 10%.
Oh, well, okay. Yeah. That's much
more
reasonable.
Come on, that's nothing.
You know, I haven't...
In fact, it's 10% across the board, $79 for the stainless steel and $59 for the aluminum.
If you do the last two cars I bought plus my computer, plus, I don't know, all the clothes I bought in the last year, I still wouldn't have enough money to buy the edition version of the Apple Watch.
Oh, I know.
So it's you know, go Apple, go for that luxury thing. But yeah, okay, so $59 for the Sport I can afford. I'm really curious to see how the screen on the Sport holds up.
I'm curious how Apple, well, I shouldn't even say how they can get away with this, because Apple Care doesn't replace the watch. Apple Care is extended warranty support. It should be exactly the same for all three because they're technically exactly the same.
Well, but if you have to replace certain parts of the...
But the inside of the gold is the same.
Yes, yeah. But the bezel is not the same. The band is not the same. The case is not the same. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a joke that you're paying $10,000 to get the same interface in a really shiny band. But, I mean, also, I mean, they didn't have any cases in stock when I bought my iPhone 6. So within 7 days, I had cracked the screen and bent the case. And
you should get Apple Care Plus.
And I did. And yeah. I was able to replace, you know, it was $99 to replace the phone after I bought the Apple Care. It was a really expensive week.
Actually, is Apple Care Plus? Okay, so there's Apple Care, which is just an extended warranty.
Right.
Plus does have a replacement. I never buy it because it's, if you figure it out, between the deductible and the limits, it usually is kind of expensive.
Yeah. Right? Well, in the case of, like, I guess it's the Apple Care Plus
on
For the iPhone 6, it was cheaper to do the Apple Care plus the charge for the screen replacement, which is basically they swap you a new phone, than it was to buy a replacement screen anywhere.
It's there like $200. You pay $200 for the deductible, and you can only do it. Here's my issue. You only get two a year. So anyway, I just don't buy extended warranties. Will you get a replacement edition for $999? Mark Gurman says it's not clear.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think there'd be like a concierge service.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So they'll come and they'll, in white gloves, bring you a new thing? Would they? Go ahead.
I'm just surprised that you still have to pay extra for insurance on the edition. I was thinking, like, that's such a high, like, that's the most expensive single product Apple's ever produced. Like, that should just be, white glove concierge service, warranty built in because, you know, extra warranty at that price. Why not? I don't understand the extra $1,000 charge. Yeah.
The $17,000 might be the most expensive, but $10,000 is what the Lisa cost. So it is not the most expensive Apple product ever.
Well, yeah, everything put together, I think some people even got it closer to $20,000.
You could get it to 20?
With all the stuff. So. Wow. Insane.
But you know that if you're going to pay, you know, $10,000 for a watch, you're just not going to care about that price for the Apple Care. You just won't. I mean, because it's going to be it's just a fashion thing, and that's the next coolest thing, you know. So it's really, although my main curiosity is how many they're limiting it to. Mm-hmm. Have we ever heard a number on that?
No. In fact, I think the thing to watch Friday, and I guess we'll just have to guess, is how busy the Apple stores will be. Will there be lines? I'm not going to go into an Apple store. The way it works is you call ahead or you go online and you make an appointment for a 15-minute window in which you'll get to talk to the genius and try on the watches. And they are encouraging people to do that. They want you to, and in fact, we talked, I guess it was last week, with Christina Warren, who wants the Sport with the pinkish white pink band, and she says, but I'm not sure, I have to try it on and see how it looks with my outfits before, like, a guy would worry about that, but does it work with your outfits?
First of all, I mean, look at me. I mean, I'm not particularly worried about things working with
my
outfits.
Here's a man who wore a kilt for many years on television.
I mean, I obviously have my own distinct sense of fashion, to be really
generous.
I don't know,
does this Apple Watch make my shorts look fat?
Does this Apple Watch make my ass look fat? Let's just say it right there. No, but it's interesting. I know people who own $25,000 worth of watches, and they have the one they wear when they're going into the serious business meetings, and they have their bang around watch when they're doing sports, and they have their everyday work watches, and it's, you know, it's great, but they are directing an entirely different community.
Yeah, and we've talked about this a lot before. I agree with you, Luria. I am interested in this will happen a few times.
Of course,
I'm interested in you know, Apple never reveals numbers, but I'm very interested in what kind of response they'll be. Because I feel like on the one hand, there's a lot of people who just don't wear watches, who are not in the market for a watch under any circumstances.
Oh, but they will be now.
But you know what? I have this. I haven't been an Apple user. My computers, yes, but my phone has. I've been on Samsung. You know, Galaxy. I'm on the Note 4 or the Edge right now. And
wait a minute, did you buy the Note 4 Edge?
Yes,
you did.
Yes, and I freaking love that phone.
You do.
Yes, but
I use a regular Note 4. I'm just curious about the Edge because that's
the Edge. I thought it was gimmicky actually at first, but
now you
like changed the way I do everything.
Really?
And the way I move about my apps. It's great, but I haven't been on an iPhone for many years, and they have me wanting to go back to the app to the iPhone.
You kind of have to. Yep.
I mean, that's pretty impressive for that drag to happen, you know? And I've never, I don't wear watches. I don't wear jewelry. I don't wear any of that stuff. So I think that's pretty impressive for them to be able to continue to have that draw.
I'm going to have to carry an iPhone for a while too, because I'm a Note 4 user. I'm an Android person.
Yeah, yeah. Although I have to say, I don't think I'll be wearing the pink watch.
Since you say you found love... Let me ask you if your loved one will be getting one, too, because a lot of the benefit of the Apple Watch is like sending your heartbeat to your honey.
Okay, that sounds so dorky. I'm sorry.
Listen to this a little bit. This is
always take you to friends.
Yeah.
Here, so, you'll see the people you like to connect with most.
These are your...
You can add friends in the Apple Watch app on your iPhone.
This person has way too many friends.
Simply turn the digital crown.
I have three friends. Maybe.
From here, you can make a call or send a message.
But.
Or if your friend has an Apple Watch, you'll see this icon.
Aha.
Which means you can send a digital touch.
Now, if your friend has an Apple Watch, you'll get this icon. It's a little finger. And now watch what she does.
When you tap the icon,
yeah,
you can draw a sketch.
Oh, really?
Your sketch will automatically be sent to your friend's watch, where it will animate exactly as you drew it.
Right now, how much would you pay? Okay, wait a minute. That's not all, though. Watch.
You can also use your finger to send taps. Because your friend is wearing an Apple Watch, they'll feel the same tap pattern on their wrist.
Okay, so, Callie, with your honey, you set up a code. You say, if I tap 3 times, then I want to get the hell out of this party. If I go knock, 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 it means I love you. Right? Like you would set up tap codes.
I know salespeople. Who would buy this for the ability to just like reach over and tap twice, and then their
manager would come out.
The manager would come out.
You have to get one for your secretary. Watch though, this is the one you're going to go for, Callie. What's your honey's name?
David.
Okay, imagine this: you're there wearing your pink iWatch.
Finally, right, of course.
You can rest 2 fingers on the screen to send your heartbeat, which your friend will also feel. Now just wait and see if you receive something back.
Aw.
Wait, I have a question. What happens if you don't get it back? Relationship over.
Oh. Honey, Kelly, I wasn't wearing my watch. I was showering.
Think of all the Mashable and HuffPost articles there are going to be about broken relationships. Apple Watch breaking relationships.
It's like getting poked and not getting poked back.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, that... It's one of those things that to me seems really dorky and like so gimmicky. But again, I thought the Edge was a little gimmicky, and it may become one of those things that you find uses for. I'll just have to wait and see.
I'm kind of surprised you found the Edge useful. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Because I dismissed it out of hand. I thought, I don't need a screensaver on the edge of my phone.
Well, it's not about the screensaver. It's about putting all of your apps on the edge so that you don't have to click that home button to get to your next app. I'm a multitask user. I'm a power user. I go back and forth between my apps like a
fiend.
Chicken with its head cut off. So, you know, I'm constantly swiping over on the edge, clicking my next one, swiping over, click, click, click. You know,
it's become a dock. It's like the dock for you.
Exactly. It is.
Interesting. You know, I've ordered, and I'll get it, I think I get it on Tuesday, the S6 Edge.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the same. It's just cosmetic. It doesn't do all the stuff on the sides that your Note 4 Edge does.
Well,
So that's dumb, right?
It has some features, right? It has like you can see some notifications along the edge.
There's a night clock mode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you have to put it face down, which I'm not going to put my glass screen face down. Davinder, have you played with the S6 yet?
Yes, I've played with the S6 and the S6 Edge. We reviewed it over in Engadget, and the S6 Edge feels so great. It's kind of weird because I actually didn't like the way the Note 4 Edge felt, because that one's kind of asymmetrical because the Edge is only on one side, and it kind of makes the phone a little bigger than it needs to be, or a little wider. But the S6 Edge just feels great, and I am halfway tempted to just, like, I don't know, maybe figure out a way to send my iPhone 6 back and kind of swap. I do have the T-Mobile plan, so maybe I'll try that. But it feels very, very nice.
A couple of things.
After holding that. Yeah?
Come on, I'm interested in the camera. People are starting to... The early review units went out. You had one. And one thing most reviewers seem to say, I can't remember what the Engadget reviewer said, is don't get the Edge because it's just goofy, and for $100 right. less, you get all the benefits of it, and right. it does look like an iPhone 6. I mean, it really is beautiful. But I got the Edge because I'm kind of a stylish guy. In case you haven't,
it feels almost like you're touching a gadget that's a little more advanced, even though it's exactly the same thing as the S6. Yeah. So I think that appeal. I'd spend $100 more for that. And honestly, after holding that, the iPhone 6 feels not as not as exciting to me. So that's just. Maybe I'm just being like the guy who wants the newest, hottest, greatest thing, but that's surprising.
All, yeah, we are.
That's us.
I mean, to take it in a slightly different direction, like, you know, I get to review the Moto E at the other end of the financial spectrum, and the build quality on that is fantastic.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it's $150,
$120.
Yep. It's cheap.
Yeah,
but
$150 with LTE, I think $120 with just 3G and a slightly slower.
Horrible camera.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. For everything else, it's fine.
Yeah.
But the screen's not great either. But the camera is useless. And I have to say, more and more, I'm not even. And I think I'm not alone on this. I don't even consider a phone unless it has a good camera.
Mm-hmm.
The iPhone has a great camera. The Note 4 has a great camera. Mm-hmm. But I'm starting to hear raves about the S6, like best camera ever. And of course, in the Samsung demo, they showed low light. It's f/1.8. It's a very fast lens.
Short number. I mean, the S5's camera was pretty good. I thought that was the best Android camera we got till now, but it seems like the S6 may be even better than what the iPhone 6 has been doing. And surprising, too, because there aren't that many great Android cameras out there. It seems like Samsung's the only one who could do it.
Right. Android, part of it is the scale. Mm-hmm. I got to sit at a table with a developer that's worked on some of the guts of the Android operating system, and it said when it was put together, they hadn't really thought about cameras as being that important for the mobile experience. Mm-hmm. And by the time they realized that it was a big deal, they nobody could buy, like, you know, Apple had basically sewn up all of the new sensors and all of the new technology and was a couple of years ahead, and you know, their code was a mess. And finally, they've gotten to the point where the internal core is allowing them to do is not doing terrible things to the photographic images and allowing raw access. And, you know, it takes somebody the size of Samsung to compete on a scale with Apple to get the latest sensors and the best technology in there. So I think hopefully Android photography is turning a very big corner. I just wonder how long it's going to take to get it down through the less expensive phones, too.
Yeah.
Well,
I just feel bad for HTC, right? Because this is the second year with the One M9. Like, the second year, they have a subpar camera in their flagship phone. That's kind of tough to convince somebody to go for the One now with what the S6 is doing.
Well, and reviews are terrible for the M9 camera, even though it's 21 megapixel.
Right.
And a number of people pointed out that the SoC, the system on a chip that they're using, which I'm sure is the 810, the Qualcomm 810, they're clocking down to increase battery life, and so the performance is apparently not very good on this.
And heat issues too, I think.
And lots of heat issues. So, yeah, I think HTC, you can't afford to stumble when you're in this foot race with Samsung. Well, not literally. This figurative foot.
Metaphorical
foot race with Samsung, Apple, and, you know, you stumble your BlackBerry.
Right.
You stumble
or
your
AMD.
Or AMD, right.
The AMD's still fighting with NVIDIA over GPUs, but they fundamentally just walked away from the CPU battle a year or two ago. They're just, we can't compete.
Patrick is the host of our great show This Week in Computer Hardware. Among all the other things you do, you've got your new shows, and we'll talk about that geek thing, which is hot. And what is this? Don't try this at home because it's going to really hurt you.
Well, tech thing is the
geek thing.
Show. Possibly Unsafe is the show where I made my face stop working.
by making a sriracha out of habanero peppers.
Yes, that was a good day at Max's house.
Did you eat it?
It was delicious. It was when I got it all over the side of my face by accident that was problematic. Or the raw habaneros. I've never actually seen Max Scoville do anything safe in his life until I saw him wearing like industrial grade safety gloves when he was cutting peppers.
Oh, these peppers. Yeah, they're dangerous. All right, let's take a break. We got a great team. We are going to talk about some hardware stuff. And Callie, I got to ask you about the Note 4 Edge, because the thing I didn't like about it was it was upside down. Remember they said that you were going to be able to put it on a table, and then the edge you would be able to see notifications surreptitiously, except they're all upside down.
Yeah, that I haven't used it quite like that, and I haven't figured out how to flip it.
So it wasn't just me.
That's not just you. I had the same kind of question. I was like,
well, that's fine if you can read upside down.
But, well, I think if you kind of place it as opposed to, so this is the edge, right?
It's pretty,
so as opposed to leaving it like this and, you know, kind of reading it from this side.
Right.
You leave it like this.
Oh, and you lean over it and read it.
Well, you kind of leave it in a position where you can kind of see it from that angle.
It was so weird.
To be honest, the one thing that I haven't figured out, and maybe I'm incorrect, but when you have it up, it doesn't actually, I haven't gotten it to like show my notifications without hitting the activate button.
That worries me a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was one of the things I was looking forward to when a notification would come through. It doesn't actually pop up on that screen without the whole thing activating.
Right. Mm. I've actually lately with my Note 4 had a real issue with accidental launching of things because of it's gotten more sensitive or something, and the buttons on the bottom when I hit the home button. Anyway, you and I will have a little clinic.
Okay.
You can help me.
We'll get it figured out.
All right. And then also I put Oxygen OS on my OnePlus. We'll talk a little bit about the OnePlus One now. They have a new no more Cyanogen mod.
Well, that's because they couldn't use Cyanogen mod.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big market.
Lots to talk about, but we're going to take a break right now and talk about something Luria needs to know more about, squarespace.com. If your website's been going down a lot, Squarespace is the easiest and best way to create a beautiful website, whether it's a blog, your photography portfolio, your online store, just gorgeous. Elegant interface. They've got beautiful templates. And the thing, and I've really learned a lot about this going through our own web redesign process. The thing about these templates is you may not see it, but under the hood, there's a lot of sophisticated technology that makes these modern templates that are unique. I mean, no one else is, for instance, they're all mobile responsive. In fact, when you use Squarespace and you post an image on it, it automatically generates 7 or 8 different images of different sizes so it fits the screen that it's going to be on, from an iPhone to a 30-inch to a 55-inch HDTV. They make it so easy now with Squarespace 7 to make changes, too. No more going back and forth from preview mode. Changes are live. You see them. You see what it looks like. It really is wonderful. And, boy, is it easy. And, of course, if you have any issues, they've got the best help in the world. Live chat and email support 24/7, not outsourced, from Squarespace in New York. All of this just starts at $8 a month. That's the hosting. That's the software. That's even the domain name when you register for a year, when you pay for a year. All Squarespace websites look great. They all have e-commerce. Every single one of them that come with a free online store. Lots of support, too, and shipping and calculations for taxes. All of that's built in. They have this new feature called Cover Pages. Very useful if you want like a one-off page. Could be your About Me page, but also a great landing page for a new product or, let's say, a new podcast, a new show.
Mm-hmm.
Podcasters love Squarespace because it just never goes down. I want you to start a trial. You do not need to give them a credit card. You just need to go to squarespace.com, click the Get Started button. You get a couple of weeks. You can import data from your old site. You can really get a sense. Change the templates at willy-nilly. That's the beauty of it. It's all separate from the data. So you just press a button. You get a whole new look. But when you decide to buy, I ask you to use the offer code TWIT. That gives you 10% off your first purchase, and that's why you're going to want to sign up for a year or more. 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace.com. Squarespace. Built it beautiful at squarespace.com. Luria Petrucci is here. Her new thing, geekslife.com. Great to have you. You may remember her as Callie Lewis. That's history. She found David, and it's all different. No, I'm teasing. What's David do? Is he one of your podcasters on the...
Yeah, he's been on the team for a while, and he does marketing, but he also is one of our hosts.
Neat.
So you'll see him on there as well.
I can't wait to meet him. That's exciting. Geekslife.com. Of course, Patrick.
Where we embrace our passions.
We embrace our passions, however weird or perverted they might be.
No.
No?
Maybe not going that far. I don't know.
We'll have to see about that one. If it's sriracha, maybe. But no, let's not go crazy.
I mean, bacon, music.
Bacon.
You know.
I had bacon this morning.
There you go.
Don't ever eat bacon with a chat room watching.
Did you do that? Of course
I did,
you did
and
that.
They yelled at me for eating bacon. Took all the fun out of it. Unless you want to be evil or, you know, perverse.
I didn't realize eating bacon on camera was considered perverse.
It is now.
Why?
Because I have people in the chat room who care about my health more than I do.
Yeah, the whole thing about food, you know, they need to catch up on the whole latest revelations
on cholesterol.
Fat
is good for you, says Patrick Norton.
I didn't say fat is good, but it's part of a balanced diet. And it turns out bacon is actually a perfect blend of protein and fats for the ingestion in the human system.
You see, Dr. Mom? You see?
Well, now, Creamy Corn Cob is saying, that sounds awkward, is saying that you licked the bacon, so there might be some something okay. more than you're not telling us.
I can't defend lascivious bacon eating.
No, I wasn't lascivious.
I was fully engaging.
Uh-huh. Anyway, Patrick Norton is
the
host.
That's how we eat bacon.
Yeah, don't you lick your bacon?
Totally. Patrick,
yeah, of course you do. Have you ever seen a dog eat bacon? They sniff around it for a while.
Not my dog.
They lick it and they swallow it whole. Techthing.com.
Yes.
And so good to have you.
Thank you. You're doing great.
And you're going to come back in 2 weeks, right?
Yes.
I felt bad when I realized you were coming in again in 2 weeks.
It's all good.
But it's a special show. April 19th is our 10th anniversary. Can you believe that Twit's 10 years old?
You don't look at my hairline. Yes, I can.
You didn't have hair then either. But
no, I had more or less.
Okay.
Hi, Devendra. How are you?
I don't know. Is there less hair?
There is less hair.
Seems like it's just a growth issue. I mean, like there's hair there. Is it not, will it not get longer?
There's less of it per square inch.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Eventually, there will be none per square inch.
Well, you're almost 50. You're doing good.
Almost.
Patrick and I go way back.
So much love.
Way back. And Devendra Hardwar, also here from Engadget. He also hosts a film podcast, which I love, Slash Film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at slashfilm.com, the Slash Film cast.
Yay. Slash Film. This is the 40th anniversary. Yesterday was April 4th, 1975. What happened on April 4th, 1975?
Jaws.
Mm. Oh, maybe. Actually, Devendra's got a great kind of analysis of that beach shot in Jaws on Slash Film.
Yeah, on Slash Film. Yeah, yeah. Not me, not by me.
Well,
a lot of people have been doing it. Yeah.
No, it was the founding of Microsoft. 40.
Wow.
Microsoft is middle-aged, officially. Economist magazine had a very interesting look back that begins with the F word right at the beginning there. So just a little word of warning. You might not want to put it into a sixth grade class. I should read the quote because it's really good. Let me see if I can pull it up here. I don't know why I don't have it up on my screen. Microsoft at middle age is the name of the article. Of course, let's get an ad out of the way. I love you, Economist. I really do. Gonna pay for you. This is the quote, and I will not read the word aloud, but those of you who are watching video can see it. Quote, what are you on, the F Windows strategy? End quote. Back in the late 1990s, when Bill Gates was still Microsoft's boss, any employee who had the temerity to suggest something that could possibly weaken the firm's flagship operating system was sure to earn his wrath. The F Windows strategy was actually a phrase used at Microsoft. Everything Microsoft did had to strengthen Windows, make it ever more crushingly dominant. Many of the company's best innovations were killed. They called it internally a strategy tax. You protect Windows at all costs, even if it means killing great products. Steve Ballmer succeeded Bill Gates. Satya Nadella, now the CEO, completely changed the company. He recoils when he hears the term strategy tax, according to The Economist, and says he now tells his staff simply to build stuff people like. Wow. That's not the Microsoft.
Revolutionary.
Yes. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, my God.
But it's true. It's not Windows first anymore. In fact, remember that Microsoft released the touch first versions of Office not on Windows Phone or Windows, but on iPad first. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's still not available on Windows Phone, I don't think.
They have some Office apps, but they're not as fully featured as the iPhone ones.
That's unheard of. But what Nadella has said is that Microsoft software will always work best. The best experience will always be on Windows. But he says we want to be where customers are. Well, I submit that what Microsoft's going through is just the way the tech industry is. They grew up, and we thank them, in a world where the desktop operating system and desktop software was king. Bill Gates saw very early on in 1975 that there would be two parallel developments, hardware, chips, and software. That without software, hardware doesn't do anything. And by making a stable platform that was good for programmers, they really, I think, jump-started the PC revolution.
Mm-hmm.
But we've moved away from desktop computers. What are those?
Well, I don't know if it's moved away so much as the mobile market has exploded in a way that Windows was entirely unready to capitalize upon.
Yeah, clearly, because Windows Phone is dead in the water.
Oh, but it's a 2%.
More than that, I would say the operating systems don't matter anymore because we live in the cloud, and the cloud doesn't care. Right?
No. Ooh, I don't know.
They've been struggling for a while, as we've all seen, right? But I'm liking where they're going.
I do too.
Mm-hmm. You know, right now, I think they're finally kind of growing into the space again and finding their way, which all companies have to do. Apple did it, even though we, you know, praise them for being such a great company right now. They had their struggles. And so all companies are going to go through this ebb and flow. And I think Microsoft is hitting it on the head or at least beginning to.
Yeah.
I feel like we could look back to this whole strategy tax thing in the 90s for Microsoft, right? Because Gates was even slow to warm up to the internet, right? And to the idea of the internet and the possibilities of it. And that mentality kind of follow them through the aughts, and then that allowed Google to like rise up and Apple to do a lot more stuff as well. So I feel like they're paying for a lot of these ignoring strategy so much in the 90s. They're still paying for it today.
You've all seen probably Manu's very famous org chart. I actually have an original of this hanging on my wall at home. There's Amazon, there's Google, there's Facebook. Microsoft is a bunch of little units pointing guns at one another. I love this cartoon so much because it's actually right on, right? That's the old Microsoft. And the question, of course, is whether Microsoft has made enough changes to survive. You know, it's tough. I feel that there's a natural business cycle. There always has been. And for tech companies, it's just very quick. 40 years is a long time.
Yeah. I mean, nobody really thought they were stumbling in a big way probably until the last 5 years as it became more and more obvious that throughout the planet that mobile was going to become the dominating platform for people to interact or compute, for lack of a better word. And all of a sudden, you know, it became like, boy, uh-oh. And by the time they realized that, you know, Ballmer's screaming. I can just envision Ballmer screaming and a bunch of people in the background.
I miss those days. I miss those days.
Ballmer was the Whiplash of technology, right? He was the J.K. Simmons of technology. It wasn't that bad.
But I mean, can you imagine how many people who are former Microsoft employees at this time, they're going like, yeah, we could have owned that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How's that going with that corporate, you know what I mean? Like, and it's not like they're not making money hand over fist still in a lot of ways. And they make a huge amount of money on Windows and a huge amount of money on Office 365. But you know there's people who are like, you know, if you just listened, you know, about 6-7 years ago, this whole, you know, Android thing wouldn't be a problem right now.
Hindsight's always 20/20. I can think of this happening so often in tech. You know, I remember Steve Jobs saying that we had such a lead in 1984 when the Mac came out, but when we coasted for 10 years and Microsoft caught up. With Windows by Windows 3.1.
95.
Steve said Windows 3, actually. I updated it to Windows 3.1.
Wow. It's pretty generous on Steve's part.
Well, this was back in 1994, maybe.
Oh, I was there.
There weren't enough choices.
I don't think I'd say parody. Windows 3.1 was an emotionally draining experience on a good day.
I think of Xerox PARC, mm-hmm. Which had all of the GUI stuff. Sure. They had the mouse. They had everything, and they couldn't figure out how to make a computer out of it. HP, Steve Wozniak came to HP and said, I'd like to build this thing called an Apple. Well, actually, it wasn't called an Apple at the time, was it? I'd like to build a personal computer. Would you like to sell it? They said, oh, there's no market for personal computers.
IBM decided to choose microchannel architecture because they wanted to control this open MCA. Platform they created.
I remember that.
They nearly wiped out all of their consumer market share instantaneously.
Mm. Actually, as long as you're talking 40th birthday, it's interesting to think of how Microsoft fumbled it. And that's, I mean, how IBM fumbled it and gave Microsoft the opening. Had IBM been more protective of their hardware, they built a computer that anybody could build, basically. The only thing you had to figure out was BIOS.
Yeah, and if Bill Gates hadn't been raised by lawyers.
Bill Gates was smart enough to say to IBM, I'll send you first of all, he didn't have a DOS. He went across the street and bought Seattle mm-hmm. DOS. But so that was one cagey thing when IBM came to him and said, we need a CPM for a new computer. Do you have one? Bill said, yeah. And then he quickly ran across the street and bought it. But he also made a great deal saying, but we'll give you non-exclusive rights to sell it. And IBM said, well, no one's going to make a PC, so okay, that should be all right.
Yeah, and there's only a worldwide market for 200,000 of them.
Right.
So that worked out.
Gates was smart, made a few mm-hmm. good decisions, and has a very big wallet to show for it. This was April Fool's, the week of April Fool's. I think all of us in the tech news business hate April Fool's.
I think I'm the only. Do you hate it?
I hate it.
I'm pretty much tired of it at this point because most people that really get into it just they're not that funny. And then I've seen some sites. It feels like it's a disservice to the readers, right? Where if you post news that could be true and then we're joking. How are readers supposed to trust us?
That's the worst one where it's believable.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you the one that really pissed me off, which they did a few days before April Fool's. An SEO company announced they had hired Matt Cutts from Google, who is, of course, the guy who fights spam at Google. And while he has spoken to SEO groups, he's not a big fan of SEO. And I read it and I thought, is this possible?
He's also on kind of a
he's on hiatus.
Hiatus, right?
Yeah.
He's taking a break.
So I believed it.
He couldn't really like come out.
I didn't even see that one.
I liked the PlayStation one, to be
honest. PlayStation Flow? Tell us about that.
Yeah. The one where you pause your game and then you put on like wetsuit gear and then a goggles for swimming, and then you go into the water and you live the game. I freaking loved that
because it was obviously not true, right?
Well, obviously not true, but still it's something that you kind of want to be true. I mean, wouldn't you want to live that immersive game?
You know what,
in the pool?
I would. That's why I'm going to buy a Oculus Rift and a HoloLens and
right.
All of the. Did you see Microsoft? So this was actually a practical joke that was real. They put MS-DOS on Windows Phone.
Microsoft laid the foundation for the future of personal computing. MS-DOS was a monochromatic milestone in the history of the PC. Installed on millions of desktops, it's where our productivity story started. Today, we're going back to basic and booting into DOS one last time.
Today, we're announcing MS-DOS Mobile. A new operating system.
I completely forgot to bring it in.
Back to the beginning.
I have it on my Lumia.
First reinvented productivity.
It totally works.
Has never.
I guess that's the way they're so going to save Windows Phone, right? With DOS.
It has a command line.
MS-DOS is my first OS.
And you can type things, and it, like, if you type camera, it launches the camera.
That's awesome.
It's an 8-bit camera.
Download the technical preview from the marketplace now. It's beyond belief.
You might wonder why a command line OS even needs a designer. And when the team told us they were rebooting DOS as an OS, that's exactly what we asked too. Being able to strip everything right back and focus on the essence of an OS, it's a metaphor for modern life.
I am not sure whether to think that it was a brilliant move or a bad move for a company trying to move along into the future.
Yeah.
Processor emulation.
Oh, it's funny.
It is.
Unfortunately, so few people have Windows Phone, nobody really could play with it. But I actually, Alex Gumpel here installed it. It was so cool, and I thought, oh, this is great. Put it on my Lumia.
Contact, camera.
It totally works. When you launch the internet browser, it launches a little Windows 1.0 screen, and you click the internet browser, it has a modem sound.
It couldn't. I'm just sitting here like thinking that Windows Phone market share is so small right now. Could this have caused a bump in Windows Phone market share?
Just to play with the April Fool's joke, it has HiMem, and it has autoexec.bat. It has a config.sys. You can edit the autoexec.bat. It probably took him about 5 minutes to port DOS.
I know. I'm just thinking of like all of the things I did not like about DOS suddenly being available in my pocket with a 10-hour battery life. I'm just not. Oh boy!
It just cracks me.
Let's play Chucky. Like I remember. Oh goodness, getting video games running under Windows DOS.
In past years, Google's done a lot of April Fool's stuff, and I think I and others last year said, Google, don't you have more important things to do? It felt like the entire company took a month off in March to create April Fool's jokes. This year, there was com.google, which was just a backwards Google page. What else did Google do? Did they, Samsung did a Galaxy Blade Edge, which is a phone so thin that you could actually chop tomatoes with it.
Now that I would love.
Is it a knife that's a phone or a phone that's a knife? No one knows.
I think it also feeds information into your phone or something.
Yeah, it has a thermometer stylus.
Yeah. I like the Groupon, the transportation with a cat.
I didn't see that one.
You get to, I didn't read all of it, but I think you get to book a ride with a cat driver. So there's always good cat.
I would like a cat driver.
This was awesome.
The Pac-Man was pretty cool. So you could take anywhere. I'll take Petaluma on maps.google.com. And if I'm glad they left this one up. And now I can play Pac-Man. Are you getting the sound? Because it's the best thing about it is there's actual. The Pac-Man, they must have licensed the Pac-Man sounds from Namco. I can't believe you're not here. Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Just in time to get eaten. Oh, no. Wait. Where am I? There I am. I'm coming down River Street. Watch out. I'm moving down Petaluma Boulevard South now. Okay, hang a left at the Twit Brick House. Blinky's going to get me. Oh, no. That is a pretty cool hack.
That's an awesome hack.
But you can tell they didn't spend a lot of time on it.
This will chase car chase coverage forever. On local news, this is it.
This is it. Yeah, from Certainly. Now on, we can do graphics with the Pac-Man. Did you see the selfie shoes? I showed
those
this
Those are
on.
Brilliant, except for the fact that the people who would wear the selfie shoe would wear a dress and then be lifting their dress to take a picture.
Oh, you're a girl. You figured that out right away. So... So here they are taking pictures of themselves. The selfie shoe allows you to insert a camera phone into your shoe and just do a high kick to get. Because who wants to carry around an ugly looking selfie stick? The selfie shoe. This is from Ms. Moose, which is apparently an actual shoe designer.
See, she's having to hold her dress.
Yeah. Well. Is you no longer need to use your arm. Be perfect for Meerkat if you could stand on one leg for an hour.
That's true.
We're all super pumped about this.
It does take away the need look of having your arm in the picture. So that there's that. I mean,
yeah. Instead,
good.
Your thigh is in the picture.
I think ThinkGeek won once again. Right? They always have.
Oh, they always have the best.
The Voltron Cat Tower was amazing. I wish I could buy that.
ThinkGeek does a bunch of April Fool's products, and then of course they say you can't have them. But one year, remember
they buy
the Tauntaun,
Tauntaun sleeping bag.
Oh, that's genius!
Yeah, that was a hit. So
ThinkGeek.com/product/iljr.
Also, the iPad arcade game was an April Fool's joke one year, and then the next year they actually
released one of those.
It.
That was a joke.
Yeah,
wow,
it was. Yeah.
The Voltron Cat Condo. See,
that is awesome.
See, you really, I think they're going to have to make this too. Although at $189, you'd have to really love your
No,
cats.
Actually, at $189, it is competitive with the crappy cat condos that are sold in almost every pet store in the United States.
That's not,
they're
that's
that
not
expensive.
I've heard spending $300 on a cat tower. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
You cat people are crazy. For my dog, I give him a sock. That's it. An old sock. That's all he needs.
Well,
he also had a Game of Thrones Clue as well. Which,
that would be. I'd play that. I'd play that.
That looked awesome, but I think they took it down. Loved by good, feared
by evil. I think I want to to get a cat just to get vet. I mean, seriously. I want a cat before.
Adopt a cat, buy a Voltron.
Cats and the internet just made for each other.
Perfect together.
That's what they need on the Apple Watch, like a little paw print thing for your kitty.
It's more useful than the heartbeat thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The where is my cat button? Well, they've opened it up to third-party developers, so who knows what cat-related apps will be developed.
There is one product that I thought was an April Fool's joke, and it wasn't. So there was one case where it went the other way, and that was the Amazon Dash button.
Yeah.
I thought for sure this was a joke.
I was talking with Will and Norm and the Tested crew. And I thought this was an April, because Will was really angry. He gets really upset about April Fool's jokes on tech. Yeah. And I was sitting here and I was like, that came out. And I couldn't believe the push button to order more Procter & Gamble products, literally, was real. And then Obama signing the executive order imposing sanctions on overseas hackers was released on April 1st. It was a weird day for April 1st.
That was real too.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's cover this, then we'll cover the Obama executive order that's impossible to enforce. This is a true story. There are things you run out of in life, things that you wish you could order.
Running out, ruin your rhythm. Introducing the Amazon Dash button.
Sometimes it's too hard to pull out your phone. Simple
it's way to too hard to.
Well, it's weird, but if you go to the bottom of the page for this, where it gets really interesting on the Amazon Dash page, and you scroll all the way to the bottom of that page, right? So this is basically a button.
The idea is you put this, you glue this button to, say, the front of your dishwasher, and when you run out of Tide, all you do is you press the button, and Tide arrives.
Right.
It'll take a couple of days. It's only for Prime members, but...
But do you have to put the stickers?
You buy the Tide button.
As near as we can tell, this is all entirely like a giant Procter & Gamble experiment.
Is it all Procter & Gamble?
But scroll all the way to the bottom. Keep scrolling. Click on the makers and innovators.
There's an API?
More. That's where it gets interesting. So the downside is if you scroll up, you're going to see where companies that this fall, like, you know, okay, Whirlpool, you're going to be able to automatically have detergent
order. It's going to build it into your washing machine?
Or your Brita filter to order more filters. And I was really disappointed because the quirky coffee machine looks so good, but I've bought a bunch of quirky products and not a single one has shipped with firmware that was feature complete. And while I can kind of tolerate that on some weird, you know, temperature sensor in my house, I'm not ready to have, you know, a vicious coffee experience because quirky can't finish the firmware before they ship a product.
Here's a good one. Here's an inkjet printer that has a button, not a dash button, but an actual just interface button that says, send me more ink.
Yeah.
Okay, I would love that on a printer because printers drive me insane, as they do all of us. And you never know what you have to order, and the whole ink toner situation is so annoying. So there are certain products that would make
sense. So this isn't like not an API, but it's something that other companies
can. The Dash Replenishment Survey. Build our stuff into your product, and we will help deliver the stuff that makes you more money. There's probably a VIG for the coffee brands. I mean, obviously, Brother's going to make money hand over fist on ink or toner or whatever it is.
But Amazon doesn't care. What Amazon's whole business is making it as easy as possible for you to buy crap.
Right.
Right? Yeah. That's why one click. Mm-hmm. This is just one
Welcome
click.
Welcome to the WALL-E future,
everyone. Yeah.
I like it.
I know. At first I thought, oh, come on. And then I realized, well, it's a win-win. Amazon wins. I'm already an Amazon customer. I probably would just go to the browser and order it in the browser anyway.
Well, it's more about the lack of transparency, right? Because you don't know exactly. I guess you could set it up right. What exactly you're going to be buying and how much it's going to cost and the payment.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's a phone app.
Yeah.
So it sends the order.
Right.
So here's how it works. You use the Amazon app on your smartphone to connect to your home Wi-Fi network and select the product you want to reorder with the Dash button. Mm-hmm. So even though it says Tide, I guess you could order Bounty.
Well, there's a list, right? So Bounty selected site. First of all, you have to apply. And then if you get selected, they will send you a Dash button.
Immediately.
Right? But there's like, I mean, you know, look at it. It's a bizarre, if you click on it, it's like Bounty, paper towels, consumer. Clorons, disinfecting wipes, Larabar, gluten-free nut and fruit bar, Olay, Regenerist.
You know, there's really only one that matters, and that's the toilet paper. Now, that's when I wish they had drone deliveries.
Well, they have pantry box deliveries, which actually makes all that stuff pretty easy.
I need it now.
You need it right away. You need to come through the bathroom.
It's kind of urgent.
Yeah.
Can you bring... Can you actually open the front door, come in my house?
See, the problem is that toilet paper is an add-on item in many cases, if it's not a subscribe and
save
item.
They said Cottonelle toilet paper is going to be one of the things, yeah.
Well, right here it says it's an add-on item, so that could be complicated.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder how often they'll actually increase the price behind the scenes without letting you know.
Every chance they have, so many
subscribers on one of these products, will that just increase the price? Because you're just going to click and not think about it. So that could be a big downfall.
I mean, most of this stuff, I mean, okay, the you know, fruit and nut bars, I think you're buying by the, it's like 16 1.7 ounce bars, but a lot of this stuff is going to take you days, if not weeks, to go through.
I mean, this too. They use modern technology. They debounce the button. You know, on a keyboard, they have debounce routines. So if you accent, if you type the letter twice within a small amount of time, they'll know, oh, that second one was a spurious. They do the same thing. Yeah. If you press the, until the bounty towels are delivered, you can't press the button again.
All I can think of is my three-year-old going bink, 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 bink,
that's
bink,
why.
Bink, and then like
that's exactly why.
You know, a truck full of Tide showing up outside my house and a $2,000 bill on Amazon Prime. So I think they probably went through early beta testing and put that feature in almost immediately.
But even then, like if once you get your shipment, if your kid or somebody accidentally hits the button again, you get one a couple days later.
That would be bad.
It's like you're gonna you're gonna have like your pantry filled with junk that's being ordered accidentally.
I already do because I use Amazon Subscribe and Save, so it sends me stuff even if I don't need it. It just sends it to me.
You know, they should actually build in. Yeah, like they should build in like SMS notifications so that if you order and get it and your husband or your partner or whoever doesn't know that it's arrived. You
Amazon sends an order alert to your phone, so it's easy to cancel if you change your mind.
The app will tell you.
That's kind of nice.
Yep.
And my worry is that we're seeing this weird lack of transparency when buying stuff or paying for stuff. Uber comes to mind, right? Because you can get an estimate for your ride in Uber, but as you're sitting there, you have no idea how much you're being charged. If you're sitting in traffic for a while, you don't know if that estimate, all of a sudden you're going to be paying 10 or 20 bucks more. And it's weird that we're getting used to this world where, just pay, just whatever. Just get me the thing. I don't, the cost doesn't matter. And the button, these buttons seem to kind of be pushing that even more forward.
Well, if you talk to people who do economic theory and people who work heavily with how cash is spent, the way people, when you start studying people closely, the way we use debit cards is radically different from the way we consider purchases when we are using physical dollar, you know, like bills and coinage. So to some degree, merely moving from physical money to a debit card automatically puts a huge layer of abstraction in the human mind between what spending is, right? So this is like a second layer of abstraction on that.
That's
but
why
we've,
I like
we've already jumped that particular
That's like how I love OneClick. I don't have to pay for it. I just press a button and it comes in 2 days. That's so awesome, right? I, you got two laptops, I see.
Well, this one's an eval unit.
Oh, okay.
Hit the button once, and then
it's really easy. I bought, I have several drones for no apparent reason, just because it was so easy. I just clicked the button.
Leo, you
might have a problem.
You had no issues purchasing things long before one click.
You can remember me during commercial breaks going, I think I'll get that.
I remember you having three phones at one point when that was a significant investment. Like, you went through like three, I think you jumped phones three times in the space of 4.5 weeks.
I have a special phone locker now at my house. You should hear it when somebody calls my Google Voice number. They all go off, and my desktop, my tablets, everything. It's like I feel like a Swiss clockmaker at midnight. It just it goes crazy. But and everyone has a different ringtone. It's just a cacophony.
I'm just making sure I still have your number on here.
I'm going to meerkat it one day. Let's take a break. I do want to talk about this Obama executive order because it seems like a good idea to me, but I'm sure Patrick will school me on why it's not.
I don't know.
First, a word from Carbonite Online Backup. We were talking about the cloud. There are so many uses for the cloud. There's no better use, if you ask me, for the cloud than backup. The cloud-based backup is such a great idea because it gets your data off-site. And, of course, Carbonite has trust no one encryption, and they have absolutely safe policies about protecting your... It's HIPAA-compliant if used properly. But the point is, if the data is backed up somewhere next to your computer, it's still at risk. Fire, flood, human error. Once you get it on the Carbonite cloud, it's safe. It is protected round-the-clock carbonites, you know, climate-controlled, backed-up network operations center, and then they back up the backup. For the hands-on business owner, it couldn't be easier. Carbonite makes backup hands-free and hassle-free. They back it all up to the cloud automatically and securely. Carbonite is a success. 1.5 million customers, including 70,000 businesses, trusting Carbonite for round-the-clock protection of their business files. You know, it's tax time. Imagine what if you'd lost your tax records. Imagine if you're a business, you've lost your invoices, your accounts receivable, your inventory. It could be the end of the world. Carbonite protects you at home and at work. I want you to try Carbonite. Go to Carbonite.com. You get 2 bonus months with your purchase if you use our offer code TWIT. Carbonite, Carbonite.com. But I'll tell you what, there's people in your life, your parents, your family, your friends, who haven't a clue, they are not backing up. Or if they're backing up, they're doing something kooky. I asked my dad, what do you do to back up stuff? He said, well, I have this thumb drive, and every once in a while, I stick it in the computer, I copy stuff over. I got him, Carbonite. Do your friends and family a favor, Carbonite.com. We love them. Offer code TWIT, 2 months free. Patrick Norton, Obama, the president, signs an executive order imposing sanctions on overseas hackers.
Well, the title's really awesome. Blocking the property of certain persons engaging in significant malicious cyber-enabled activities.
Is that an acronym? Does it spell anything?
BPCPESMCEA.
The executive order does allow the government to freeze the assets of somebody who's attacking us from outside the United States.
My first thought was like, wow, is this a shot across the bow of all of the hacking? It's going some pretty severe hacking that has been traced back to China, for example.
Right.
And, you know, one of the articles that came up later was that there was like a ZDNet article after Obama's cybersecurity order threatened Snowden fund Bitcoin's donation spike.
Oh.
Because, you know,
so this could be used against Snowden.
Yes.
If he had any assets left stateside. But I'm sure they seized those a long time ago.
Well, but you see, you know, it's kind of interesting. Like, how far does the executive order go? Like, any person determined by the Secretary of the Treasury in consultation with the Attorney General and the Secretary of State to be responsible for, complicit in, or to have engaged in the receipt or use of commercial or competitive advantage. You know, so industrial espionage.
You're worried that it's going to be kind of widely interpreted to be anything we don't like.
Yeah. Well, it seems that everything, no matter who's in power, it seems to be everything gets widely interpreted to suit their particular needs at that particular moment, right? And if Snowden's fund is overseas and you have to send the fund overseas to support Snowden or anything else you might believe in that the federal government disagrees with, does that then become something that they can, freeze or block?
Yeah, but
or
they've always, I mean, look. They have tanks. They have ICBMs. If the federal government, the U.S. government doesn't like something, they have means.
I'm not saying they don't.
This is just one. You know what I thought was interesting is Obama actually wrote about this on Medium.
Mm-hmm.
He published an article on Medium explaining this, which I think it tells you something about who he's aiming, who he needs to do the PR with. It's people like you. It's the techno elite who might be worried about this. I think the problem is how do you take arm against hackers that are outside the U.S. soil? I mean, what do you do? Do you escalate cyber warfare? Because that's probably not the answer. But on the other hand, we need to defend ourselves.
It's going to be interesting. I'll be at DEF CON this year for the first time in several years. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the reaction of the sort of hacker community is to this, because a bunch of the stuff that's been put in place could easily block white hat activities or pen testing activities, or has been interpreted in ways that people who make their living making networks more secure or researching ways to make networks more secure, because a company simply going like, there are no holes in our product, is not actually security. It's denial,
right?
And denial actually isn't very effective in the long run. But I think it's going to be curious to see how this is used and kind of what the response is moving forward. I don't know. It's been an interesting, it's been an interesting few weeks in Washington for technology to kind of be understated.
It's a challenging problem. It really is. You know, I mean, you had hackers putatively from North Korea effectively shutting down Sony Pictures Entertainment. Mm-hmm. How do you prosecute something like that? I mean, you can tell Sony, well, you got to tighten up your security. Obviously, they did a bad job of that. But you have Iranian hackers upset with the Sands Casino because mm-hmm. they're owned by Shelley Adelson, who gives money to Israel, breaking in and totally hacking. Now, I got to figure, the Sands, if anybody has good security, it's a casino back-end operation, back-house operation. They broke in.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Lizard Squad bringing down Microsoft Xbox and PlayStation Live all day Christmas Day using our routers, because apparently so many routers are so full of bugs and exploits, they were able to create a band of marauding routers.
Well, that's also why people are so up in arms about the whole idea of the Internet of Things, because the Internet of Things is kind of an even less kind of well-looked at corner. You look at routers, for an example. Most routers, there's a chipset. There's a set of software that comes with the chipset. Most router vendors, right, you know, they're going to throw an interface on it.
They're going to walk away and never come back.
They might do an update, right? But I remember, like, you know, that's one of the reasons why the open source community has been so valuable for routers, because in many cases, there's either been, like, one update, you know, a few months after a router's released, and it's never been updated, which means they never may have patched inherent flaws in the code that came from the factory, because they take the factory code, they skin it, and then they walk away from it. And the Internet of Things promises to be even worse, because in many cases, by the time you have, like, this chip that goes into this thing, and it's got, you know, it's amazing how many holes are being created.
Yeah, let's just put everything on the Internet and cross our fingers. What do you think? I actually haven't asked you about this. I'm sure you and Ryan have talked on Twitch about this, but I remember going back a little ways. I think we did this on the screensavers, maybe not, but putting DDWRT on a Linksys 54. WRT 54. So Asus actually now ships routers with support for DDWRT. They do their own, I think, weird version of DDWRT on here, but you can then upgrade it. It's called Asus WRT, but then you can upgrade it to the full open source DDWRT. But that's one way to handle this, is to say, okay, we'll put our own firmware on here, but we'll make it possible for the open source community to do something.
It's something that's happening at the high end, and it gets really rancorous, because the people who are developing these, like, I'm assuming that at this point that they've worked closely with the DDWRT community, and please don't roast me online if this is not true, but it was interesting, like, when Linksys said they were going to have, I want to say, OpenWRT, and the OpenWRT community was like, what? And there was this, like, 2-month cycle as they kind of worked everything out.
Right.
But I think it's good. I think it's smart, because it allows, you know, it's people buying a $250 router, there's kind of like two categories. They're like, hey, it's $250. It's going to make my stuff faster, which isn't probably true, depending on some areas of, you know, I mean, if you've got 802.11b or 802.11g, you know, this multi-zillion-dollar router is not going to make a lot of things better. But there's the other side of the people that are spending this much money on a router, who are demanding performance and will take the time to set it up and configure it, and are thrilled at the idea of having a big, fat, open-source operating system available for it. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. These are expensive routers. You're right. They're Apple expensive.
Well, 180 is not bad these days. You can get a great router for, you know, like $50. You can also, there it is down there. There's the big honking $300 routers.
Yeah. The more antennas, the better, right? How many does that have? 6 antennas?
I've been working on an article discussing the sort of, like, you know, AC 5433 and what that actually means, and it's kind of hysterical.
I think you don't want your neighbor to get this, because they're going to suck all the bandwidth out of the sky. Right? This is like your worst nightmare. If your neighbor has a 6 antenna router, there's nothing left for you.
Well, it's interesting when you look at the reviews on that. Like,
they're very positive.
Look at the eggs. There's like 2.5. No, the reviews.
Oh, the reviews on the new egg reviews
the
are not good.
The people who own them reviews.
Yeah.
You know, 200 people in an average of like 2.5 eggs, that is not a spectacular score.
Right.
But it's got a lot of antennas.
With all the Internet of Things, you know, security holes like you were talking about, I imagine a day where, you know, everything is connected, right? Our stoves and our ACs and our heaters and all of that. And I just imagine one day, like, a huge hack on an entire neighborhood. And we give so much of our privacy and our security away just in an effort to get such cool tech, that I think it'll come to a head and the bubble will burst. And eventually we're going to have to really start in mass paying attention to security. But I'm not sure that people are really putting their efforts into it as much as they should, you know, as you kind of alluded to, Patrick. It's certainly something we're going down the path of a potential huge issue.
Although this is nothing new, and I think we've talked about this before too, these surveillance cameras that are so easily hacked. This is a website that has online cameras that you just can log into because the password is either default or the software, the firmware has an error. And there's 1,411 in the United States. I'm not sure I want to show these, but anyway.
I think most of these are pretty benign.
Those are pretty benign. Okay. But these are well-known hacks that have been going on for a long time. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the brand that was particularly vulnerable. But, you know, I mean, Foscam. I don't know if Foscam ever went around through, you know, and fixed those old cameras that they sold.
They can't.
There's no process.
Well, it's also, I mean, this is a caveat emptor kind of situation. If you don't take responsibility for the technology that you are running, you know, whose fault is that?
Yeah. Here's what I think we'll end up doing, I imagine. If you think about, I don't care if people can look at my thermostat. What I've got to do is isolate the stuff that I want to keep secure from the network. So almost have a guest network for the Internet of Things stuff that is isolated, firewalled from my network where I have important stuff.
Well, you'll care if you're in Chicago in the middle of winter and somebody turns your heat off and, you know.
Well, who's going to do that, really? That's a lot of work.
Have you heard about swatting, Leo? If people will pretend there's a hostage.
I'm going to get you. I'm going to turn your heat up. You're going to be so sorry.
Well, no.
Gosh, it's awfully warm in here. Maybe I should check the Nest.
Well, if I know you're on vacation for 2 weeks and I set your heat to 100 degrees and you come back to a $700 gas bill. If I turn the heat off in your house and your pipes freeze. Ever see what happens to a house in Chicago in January?
And there is some question as to what's the benefit of having a fridge or a thermostat on the public internet.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's been on public internet, I think you can accomplish it without being public.
Nest gets weather reports, right? So it's part of what it does. It says, well, I'm going to check what the weather is in this locale so I can make sensible decisions about how warm to make it or how cold to make it. I guess there's a reason, but it doesn't.
Yeah. I hope as we get deeper into the functions for some of these, kitchen gadgets, I hope we won't be able to turn our stoves on and off, you know, over an app, over the web, because that...
You already can.
Don't build that. You can.
There's one.
Samsung makes a smart stove, right, that you can control.
I know. Yeah. But I didn't know you could actually turn it on, because that's the sort of thing. You can isolate, you know, okay.
I came home and all the burners were on full.
Oh, my God.
And my thermostat was turned up all the way. That would be a disaster.
Nothing bad could happen there. Or you just let the gas run for a while, you know. Nothing bad can happen.
And then my Amazon Echo had ordered 300 boxes of diapers. It's just
excited for it is the fact that, you know, you pull the milk out and you're done with the milk and you throw it away. It doesn't get returned. And the refrigerator knows that you have done that. And then it ships you some more.
Just like a Las Vegas hotel that charges you $38.
But, you know, I mean, all these smart devices certainly present issues. Like,
people
all
order
our
pizza.
Stoves come on. And
we had some poor pizza guy come here and said, I got your pizza. We didn't order pizza. Oh, yeah, you did. We ordered. But actually, we just bought it and we ate it because it was good.
So. Yeah, but I mean,
we said, okay, here's $50. Thanks.
But I mean, look at this. I mean, in the news, separate swatting hoaxes draw large police responses. And you know, this is in the Boston area, East Chester, Savannah, Tennessee.
We got swatted last week. I don't want to talk about it. Revenge porn.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. We'll just keep that quiet. Yeah. But that's why you may have noticed an armed guard and a metal detector.
I was going to ask you about
that. Yeah. We've actually had to change our policies here. Here's a good one. Here's a story with a happy ending. This jerk who had a revenge porn site, Kevin Christopher Ballert of San Diego. This guy was so evil that he was soliciting pictures of ex-girlfriends, then going to the ex-girlfriend saying, if you give me $300, I won't post this. So he was both at a revenge porn site and was extorting people, putting people's names up. Found guilty in February, glad to say, on 6 counts of extortion, 21 counts of identity theft for running a website that posted nude photos of individuals as well as identifying information without their consent. 18 years in the slammer. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. 18 years. I think he didn't expect that. It looks like he didn't expect that. 18 years.
Of course he didn't expect
it. In the slammer. Dead. Nice, huh? Nice. Let's hope there's more of these. And I furthermore hope that this kind of sends a message out to the rest of the world. This is not okay.
The article is really depressing because his website would only post photos if, like, they had identifying information and Facebook accounts tied into the photos.
Yeah, no wonder they threw the book at him. Because, I mean, yeah. And that's the
end. And then there was a completely separate website that would offer to get the photos taken down.
ChangeMyReputation.com.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty.
Wow. That is. Talk about chutzpah.
Talk about vile.
Vile. ChangeMyReputation.com. The sad thing is, he didn't make that much money, $900 a month. but Change My Reputation, he'd received payments totaling $30,000.
Yeah.
So maybe that was where the money was in the extortion.
Almost feels like we need some sort of like Black Mirror punishment for this guy, right?
No kidding.
He's in jail for 18 years, and also, I don't know, all his, whenever he takes a shower, it's all live streamed, and he doesn't know. Or something.
You will be meerkatted for the rest of your life. That's kind of double punishment. Not only are you going to be streamed for the rest of your life, but you're going to be on a dying service.
That would be not punishment, though, wouldn't it?
No, you're right. You're right. Actually, I don't. I still like meerkat, but some. But Kevin Marks on our This Week in Google show this week kind of took some of the fun out of it. Out of all of this live streaming, including the live streaming that we do here with the chat room and all that, he said, well, that's really, Kevin's a little, I think it's too smart. That really is all about just the ego of the person streaming because it's useless for viewers. They want to watch it on demand. They don't want to watch it when you're doing it. So Meerkat's really all about the interaction you get or Periscope with little hearts flying up.
I would disagree with that. Mm. On, you know, the viewer side of things, yes, people want on demand, but they love live, as you well know. I mean, it's the reason you stream live.
Make me feel better because I was feeling pretty crappy for the rest of the week. Tell me I'm not a narcissist.
Well, I mean,
look, bundt cake. the whole know. It's all about tell me I'm not a narcissist, Luria, please. Because you do the same thing, right? You do, in fact, you're going to do a live stream every Friday on Geese Life, right?
Exactly. And I've been playing with Periscope constantly since it was released. And I love it. The audience loves it. They love to get, you know, that kind of live interaction. And the thing with on demand is just like TV, you don't get to interact with the host. And that's what this world today of the internet provides us is that one-on-one and the ability to feel like we are friends and not just feel like, but we are friends with the audience. And so you've got to have that combination of on-demand and live.
Yeah. I mean, that's what we do. I do like the feedback. It's definitely an ego boost. Go ahead, I'm sorry, Devendra. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's okay. But I think that's part of the argument against Meerkat, right? Because they don't have on-demand yet. It's all, you know, live. You have to watch it live. And every time I've gone to try to watch a Meerkat, I always get the message that the stream is over. So you need both. But, I mean, you guys kind of proved, Leo, that having that live streaming interaction, that's been important for the growth of all of your shows. Like, when I started doing a movie podcast, we did it live, too, when we were recording, because it was great to have that audience interaction. There's a lot more to it than just, you know, you being
a narcissist.
Narcissistic. There's that too. I mean, you really want us to see you eat bacon, Leo. Lick that bacon.
Correction,
yeah.
Lick bacon.
You know, licking bacon just isn't as wonderful if people aren't watching. Is that what
but
we're saying?
We did the Screensavers live because it was more fun. And that's why, you know, the Tonight Show is shot live on tape. I mean, they show it later.
Well, but I mean, the Screensavers was really an anachronism that way because it was like the Screensavers, some news shows, and live sports. Because most smart people don't make live television live. We didn't even have a 7-second delay. So if we screwed up, everybody watching got to share in the fun and then see it over and over again in reruns. I mean, I think it's the other thing that's been interesting is watching this whole, you know, what's wrong with tech journalism backlash, because everybody talked about Meerkat. The Meerkat raised a bunch of last minute funding, and then Periscope shows up, and now people are arguing over whether or not Periscope has completely crushed Meerkat or not. I mean, you guys probably know more over in Gadget than I would, but it's interesting to watch kind of the reaction, sort of the meta reaction to technology coverage and how excited people were about Meerkat till they weren't. Mm-hmm. Or am I just sort of so far outside of this I can't even see what's going on?
Meerkat, there's been all sorts of criticism. So that article you guys are talking about is about how Meerkat is sort of killing tech journalism, and I think that
was the worst link baity article I ever saw in my life.
It was a little much, but I think there is a certain, you know, tendency among people who really love tech to like, oh man, this thing is new and shiny, and I'm going to really hype this up, and especially before something like South by Southwest or around South by, like we've had, that's where Twitter blew up, but also Foursquare. Mm-hmm. And remember Hipster and like all those other like social
highlights,
where your friends are. Yeah, highlight, things like that. We've had a lot of apps that people got really excited about that just never went anywhere. Mm-hmm. And Meerkat, I think Meerkat just benefited from a lot of that hype early on. I don't think that means tech journalists are kind of dying or aren't doing their job, but I do think it means we kind of have to wake up and think more about what this tech means for normal people. When Meerkat, you know, was in its heyday for that 1 week or that one weekend, it was all just tech people talking to tech people. And that's the sort of thing that bugs me, because you get to talk to normal people to really see what's going on.
Periscope seems to have much more of a global audience and a diverse audience, but maybe that's just
to get back on.
Well, they also
Android
have the features you need too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Both Meerkat and Periscope say they are doing Android. We actually interviewed the founder of Meerkat on Triangulation a week ago, Ben Rubin, and he was very smart. He's not a dumb fella. And I thought that he had some insight. He said, really, this is a very vertical niche, this idea of live streaming, but it's ephemeral. There's no saved version. It's just one of many possible niches. Periscope takes another niche. They save it, but only for 24 hours. YouTube Live, you could argue, takes a third niche where it's saved forever. And we do that. We save it forever. But we also edited it after the fact to tighten it up a little bit. I think Meerkat's very interesting.
It's that Meerkat and Periscope and everything, they're getting so much attention. Hang With was also another one that's gotten a lot of attention. But Quick, 4 years ago.
I know.
Was it four years ago that this started?
That's why, Luria, because we didn't have bandwidth, we didn't have cameras. It wasn't as good. Right. It's much better now. Plus, they seem to have found a UI that kind of, for one thing, it's portrait mode, so it's natural to watch it on a portrait mode phone. It's you get the live chat. It really is geared to the narcissistic broadcasters. Oh, look, all the people watching me. Oh, look, all the people talking to me. Oh, look at the hearts.
I do like the hearts.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. Well, that's like any social medium, right? There's Twitter. They're the people who produce all the content, and they're the people who, you know, the lurkers who kind of sit back and read all the tweets. Mm-hmm. But I love that feedback I get from Twitter, like all the notifications, everything, unless I'm like talking about Gamergate or something. But I love that feedback. So kind of makes sense for Meerkat. The better question is, why is it taking off now? It didn't before. I think the like social structure we have now with Twitter and everything, that kind of allows for more of this content to get out there. Because, live streaming, Ustream has been around for a while. Justin.tv was doing it for a long time before the whole Twitch thing. Yeah.
I should have said Hangouts on Air, not YouTube Live. Everybody can use Hangouts on Air.
Right.
YouTube Live is for trained professionals. Don't try this at home. This is the article. It's Taro Quintinian, who may never again. We're going to freeze his assets in the United States. Meerkat is dying, and it's taking U.S. tech journalism with it. But you know what? We talk about stuff not based on how many downloads it has, but whether it's interesting, whether it's transformative, whether the technology is meaningful. Not because it's the number one app on Twitter or on iTunes. That's not what makes something of interest. It's not a popularity contest.
Pat. Well, it shouldn't be.
Let's take a
Sometimes
break.
Sometimes it is.
We got a great panel. I would just hang out with these guys all day if I could. Well, I guess I will because it's Twit.
We are here forever.
We're here for the rest of your life. Devendra Hardwar from Engadget. Nice to have you. Mr. Patrick Norton, my old friend from techthing.com and possibly unsafe.com.
I love that's a good name.
Long, but good.
Yeah, we couldn't let that one go.
No, too good to waste. And, of course, Luria Petrucci, you may know her as Callie Lewis from her new site, geekslife.com. Everybody must get in line. Sign up, join up, become a fan. I immediately signed up.
Oh.
I was, oh, I'm just, you know, I just, I don't want to get all mushy on you or anything. But I think you're great, and I'm really glad to see you kind of branch out on your own.
Well, thank you.
Do your own thing.
Me too. I'm excited to do so. You know, it was nine years ago when I joined Call for Help.
Yeah, you filled in for Amber for some weeks and did such
and
a great job.
A lot about television and about how to be a host because I was brand new back then. So owe a lot to you, and I appreciate
you had that,
that
spark even then. There was something about no, there really was. There was something about you even then. In fact, we were looking for somebody to fill in for Amber on her vacation, and I think I must have seen you on the internet and said, "What about?"
I think you had seen me, but then I called you. I called your radio show.
Oh yeah, that's why I saw you because you called the show, and I said, "Well, let me see what this is." That was a smart move. A little self promotion there. It's a longtime friend and a very, very talented person.
Thank you, Leo.
Luria, you got spunk. And I hate spunk. Are you going to, I know people know Geek Beat and so forth. Is Geek Beat continuing without you? What's going to happen there?
No. Geek Beat is done. So
John says he's retiring. Although I guess he had deals. He had to do NAB still or something.
Yeah. We're still doing NAB show. We're the official broadcaster for NAB show.
So you're kind of contractual.
We're still doing that under Geek Beat, but that'll be the last thing. And then
the contractual fulfillment tour.
Something like that. Yeah. But I'm really looking forward to it. I love NAB show.
Well, we'll see you there. I'll be there. We're doing the Broadcast Minds panel with the folks from TriCaster New Tech. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, awesome. I was on that last year.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a fun thing. I've done it once or twice, and they rotate through people, and I guess nobody said yes, so they got me again.
Well, come on the show.
If I have time, I will. Where will you be?
At the NAB booth, which is between Central Hall or right at the entrance of Central Hall.
Nice location.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit about what you want to do with the new thing. What is new? What is different?
Well, it's more of a real look at, you know, how technology or how our other passions can affect your life. So from a technology perspective on Tech Whisperer, which will be my tech show, it'll be a real world look at how these new technologies affect your life and what they can do for you or what you need to watch out for, things like that. And then embracing all of our other passions. I love music and I love stand-up paddleboarding. And so we'll be just having fun with our passions. And I really want to get the community involved more. This is the number one thing that I have loved about doing, you know, shows online has been the community and the interaction and sharing that passion. I know I say that a lot, but with the community members. And so we're going to be looking at ways that they can participate a lot more. So
what happens to the studio? You built that beautiful geek house.
Yeah, sometimes, you know, sometimes you overextend yourself.
Oh, is it expensive? Oh, tell me about that. Holy cow. You don't want to rent it? Oh, no, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no.
Do you know what my electricity bill is?
Yeah, as you know, these things are expensive. And I just wanted to make
sure. I tried to warn you, Louie. I said, Louie.
Louie.
It's Luria meets Callie is Louie. I'm going to call you Louie. So, I tried to warn you, Louie.
I know this stuff's
expensive.
And, you know, I mean, these in business, and that's what this is. We have an entire team who have mouths to feed at home.
Right.
You know, you try things, and they may or may not work out, and it's okay to say.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? That didn't quite work out. We're going to take a step back and we're going to grow more organically and we're going to grow with a base that helps us stay alive for forever. Because I want to do this forever.
Best thing we ever did. I looked at the Revision 3 model. You guys got you're no longer there, but you had investment. Actually, your stuff still says Revision 3 at the end, I noticed, Luria. What is that?
Correct.
You're still a Revision 3 partner?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, we're still licensed. So, like, I own my content, but, you know, they license it and we partner with them.
Yeah. But that was, I think, one of the issues. You got a lot of money up front, investment capital, and you want to spend it. And so I think the discipline for us of only spending the money we could afford to spend, what money we made,
right,
has been a good discipline and slow growth.
Which is why I've been working out of somebody else's warehouse.
You know, Darren's doing a good job, though, yes. Right? Hack 5 is doing all right.
And the hack shop is amazing.
Yeah. But I think that's part of the success, right? They had another side business, which was selling this stuff online. And I think that's – you got to have a revenue stream.
Yes. That's a very –
minor detail.
Well, but it's also something that can be so funny about working in this, you know, the Bay Area in venture capital land where people are like, here's a giant – I'm sorry, Devendra.
He just slugged you, Devendra. You know, I don't think you felt it, but man – it's good thing you didn't have a sledgehammer.
But it's so funny. It's like, you know, a lot of people don't realize until after a giant check is in their bank account that the venture capital company wants a 10 or 100x return on that investment, or at least a business that is going to yield gigantic amounts of cash.
Yeah, so they put pressure on you.
Right.
You either have to have an exit or you have to have massive growth.
It's massive growth and then an exit.
Right.
I don't know. It's interesting.
We don't have massive growth. We have little tiny growths all over us. No, we actually we grow slowly, but not the size of growth that a VC would want. I mean, 5 or 10% growth a year in the tech business is nothing. But Callie, Luria, to the point you made, failure, and this is one of the things that really has spurred innovation in Silicon Valley. Failure is not in any way a black mark in this arena.
No.
Everybody has failures.
And you learn from them, you know. I don't really even think of them as failures per se. You know, that's a bad word, but it's learning. You grow and you change and you adjust, and only can you make it long term if you do that adjustment and not just kind of sit back and go crap.
You don't want to beat your head against the same wall over and over. You always want a new wall to beat your head against.
Yeah.
Ben Rubin, who the Meerkat guy, actually Meerkat came out of the failure of Yevo, which was a live streaming company they had founded in Israel, where they're from, a couple of years ago. And Yevo never gained ground. So they said, let's tear it all down. Mm-hmm. And what we're going to do, and I thought this was interesting, is we're going to do experiment after experiment. This is what Kevin Rose did with Milk. We're going to do experiment after experiment. If something fails, we'll kill it fast and move on. And it just happened that Meerkat was a quick hit. But it could have been a failure, and then they would have tried something else. And we're learning each time. And I think that's exactly the way to look at it.
Exactly. I mean, Thomas Edison, you know, how many times did he try for the light bulb, right?
So, he just stole it. That was the easiest part.
Well,
just, you know, if you can't figure it out, just steal it. Then no problem. Yeah. All right, let's take a break. I want to talk more with what a great panel. Friends of mine, I'm happy to say, for a long time. Well, Devendra, you're a relatively new friend, but. It's great to have you as part of the
party. You guys feel like old friends.
Yeah, I think so.
I've been watching you all forever.
Once you know, you're in the geek fraternity. Mm-hmm. I meet people all the time I've never met before, but we always feel like, don't we?
Yeah.
When we meet people in the real world, these are your friends.
I'm always amazed at the, I don't know. It's so many cool people out there.
Did you miss anything this week? Because it was an amazing week. Let's take a look back at this week on Twit.
Previously on Twit.
The Meerkat Hat TM is a specially designed hat so you can meerkat hands-free.
I hate April 1st.
Triangulation.
Ben Rubin is the founder of Meerkat, which is literally the hottest app out there right now.
If the last decade was about sharing, the next decade is going to be about participating.
All about Android.
I have the S6 Edge in my hand right now, and I'm just so impressed
with the camera quality of this. I really just fell in love.
I want the phone to be the one to say I love you first.
Security Now.
And then we have the ever-popular list of the 50 most used passwords. This page shows the 20 most common keyboard patterns.
ADG JMPTW.
I don't see a pattern.
Twit. Bring your brain. We'll do the rest.
Type wind.
OMG. OMG.
I think I spent half of my morning on Twitter convincing people that this was real.
Launching camera. Oh my God, it's 8-bit. Okay, I was just a little overexcited about that, I think. Calm down a little bit. I want to tell you a little bit about Audible. I think we have done a lot for Audible over the last, I don't know, how many years have we been Audible fans? I started on Audible in 2000 when I was still commuting to the screensavers. Audibles have been an advertiser on Twit for probably 7 years, 7 or 8 years, for a long time. And I'll tell you what, I have a feeling that more than a few devoted Audible listeners first found out about it here. Audible is an audiobook store with more than 150,000 titles. All of the new books, when they come out nowadays, come out on Audible. In fact, I'm listening to the new Steve Jobs book, Becoming Steve Jobs, on Audible. It's great. I have to say, I was a little skeptical at first. I'd heard these stories before. There it is. But as I've been listening, Brent Schlender and somebody else, Rick somebody, Textil, poor Rick, he doesn't get any of the credit, wrote, I think, probably the most insightful book about Steve, both his genius and his flaws, I've read yet. It's really interesting. It's an Audible. Tell you what, I got two books for you on Audible. Audible's great because you can listen on your computer. You can listen on your phone. They have Audible apps for everything. They just updated their Windows Phone app. It's really great. iOS, Android, Windows 8. I actually found out I could finally listen on a Chromebook. I didn't even know this, but they have a player on the Audible site. I've been listening on the Chromebook. So I'm a happy camper. Everywhere you go, of course, in the car is where I mostly listen, but Audible's nice for any time where you can't hold a book, you can't read a book, but you're doing something mindless that reading a book would be really fun, like on the treadmill, walking the dog, doing the dishes, commuting. My commute's not as long as it used to be, but I listen to Audible every single day because Audible lifts you up. It informs you. It entertains you. And when you're listening to a great book on Audible, you are transported. When you listen to some of the science fiction I've been listening to lately, it just takes you to another world, and time goes by, and suddenly you're at the end of your commute. You go, I think I'm going to have to drive around the block a couple of times because I've got to finish this chapter. Dishes are washed magically. So there's one book I've been listening to, the new Walter Isaacson book. People say is good, The Innovators. Our friend John Slanina, Jammer B, our studio master here, has recommended this, and I can't wait. This is the Otherland series, which just made it to Audible. Tad Williams' story of virtual reality and how it is both wonderful and challenging, to say the least. It's the Otherland series. How many of them are there? Four of them? Book one, I just downloaded, City of Golden Shadow. This sounds great. I haven't started it yet, John, but I will soon. Neil Gaiman's newest, Trigger Warning, just downloaded. Let me see what else. I've been really loving that Beatles biography. I'm still listening to that. It's like 800 hours. Here's one. If you like The Princess Bride, the Cary Elwes, who was the guy,
the Dread Pirate Roberts.
Dread Pirate Roberts. Wesley. He was Wesley. And later Dread Pirate Roberts.
A friend of mine just saw this movie for the first
such
time
a great
two
movie.
Days ago.
Wow.
And a really good read.
So Carrie has made a book called As You Wish, The Inconceivable Tales of the Making of Princess Bride. You can get here's what I'm going to do. I got a deal for you, son. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get you two books absolutely free when you go to audible.com/twit2. That's audible.com/twit and the number 2. You're going to be getting signing up for the Platinum Plan. That's the 2 books a month subscription. That's the one I use. You get 2 book credits per month. Now, this is free for the first 30 days. You'll also get the Daily Digest of the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times, which is really nice. Keep you up to date on what's going on in the world. You can cancel anytime in the first 30 days. Pay nothing. Those books are yours forever. You get to keep those forever. I think this is a great deal. If you maybe a little say, I don't know, am I going to enjoy listening to books compared to reading them? Maybe not for everybody, but all I can do is say try it because I tell you what, changed my life forever. And I know so many people who feel that way about Audible. Audible.com/twit and the number 2. Google says 5% of visitors to its site, you know, when you go to google.com, mm-hmm. they're able to see kind of what's going on. They did a study in conjunction with UC Berkeley. 5% of people visiting Google's sites and services have at least one ad injector installed. 5, that's 1 in 20.
That's a lot.
That's millions, given the amount of traffic Google has. So what is an ad injector? Would you explain maybe, Patrick, what an ad injector does?
Something that injects ads that you maybe don't want inside of your system, including potentially malicious code.
This is what we were upset with Lenovo for, because they had that thing that they said, well, we know our customers want Superfish. Superfish would look at what you were visiting on the web and then add ads to an existing page that are related to the things you're looking at. And I don't think anybody wants that. They come bundled often, and I have to yell at CNET for this. They come bundled often from download.com, which is one terrible place to get your shareware, by the way.
Yeah. Well, it's also like some really – it's funny how many things now that did not have bundled applications. Now, you know, you really, really, really have to pay attention because, you know, there's still toolbars and installers out there.
And oh, yeah. A lot of this comes from ask.com. A lot of this. Don't get those ask toolbars, kids.
Wait. You know, the thing about CNET and download.com, I was talking with an executive there who she'll go unnamed, but they pretty much admitted, oh, yeah. Yeah. There's a ton of spyware in that crap.
Why do they do it?
A lot of money. Makes them so much money.
Money. Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
You know, I could make money by robbing banks, but I don't do it, right? I could set up a revenge porn site, but I don't do it. There are some things that make you a lot of money that are just wrong.
Yeah. I mean, you've got to – this is the problem with big companies, right, is as you get bigger, you have – as you were saying, you have VCs to answer to, and you have people you have to answer to, and you just start doing things that you shouldn't otherwise do or you would never think that you would do. So somebody is always having to keep people responsible, and that has to be the consumer a lot of times.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's sad. Are you excited about the Surface 3, Patrick?
Not nearly as excited as other people are.
Other people are very excited. I don't know why. Yeah, the Surface Pro 3 is actually a pretty good system. A lot of people do like it. It's a very good screen. It's running Windows 8.1 Professional. But it's expensive. It starts at $800, and if you're going to have a keyboard, even more. So Microsoft this week announced a new Surface 3. First of all, a couple of things to deduce from this. Windows RT is dead.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Woo! That was a big mistake.
So this takes up that space in the market where like a $500 kind of tablet. It's very light.
It's not only the Windows operating system, but unlike RT, there's applications you can run.
It's actual Windows. It's running on an Atom, a Cherry Trail Atom. Not the fastest processor, but for most people, plenty. 2 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage. That's $499. And by the way, Microsoft's already said, of course, that if you have Windows 7 or 8, you can upgrade to Windows 10. So this summer, you'll get Windows 10 on it. They say available May 5th. 1920 by 1280 display. That's 3.2, which is the Surface Pro 3 is 3.2, right?
Yep.
I think that I have a Chrome, you know, the Pixel is also 3.2, right? And it's, I have mixed feelings about it. Like, I want kind of more. I want it to be
You wild. Always well, want more, Leo.
More. When everything started having widescreen displays, right, everyone started complaining, oh, I wanted more because you used to have more vertical space.
Right.
And it seems like a constant trade-off. I really like the change in the Surface Pro 3 to 4x8. That ratio.
So you like it. Okay. I just mixed feelings about it. Some things it's great. Like if it's just doing a full screen, it's fine. Not good for multiple screens.
Well, it's a tablet.
Right. Well, but is it?
Well,
I mean, you want to be able to do multiple. That has the ability to do multiple screens, so you might as well use it.
They're just skinny. It's 1.3.
Like a tablet that's more than a tablet, right?
Yeah. 1.37 pounds. It's a third of an inch thick, very thin. Dolby speakers, two cameras, 8 megapixels in the back, 3.5 on the front. No fan. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Still has the kickstand, but it's not the new kickstand. It's the three-position kickstand.
Mm-hmm. And full touchscreen and stylus support, which is nice.
That's nice. It doesn't come with a stylus, but you could buy a stylus.
Yeah, of course. And it doesn't come with a keyboard either, which is, that's Microsoft's perpetual mistake with all of these Surface things, because you're advertising a price that's effectively a lie. You could think of this as a $499 computer, but really it's like, what, $630 with the keyboard?
Yeah.
But as an inexpensive computer that can do a lot with a touchscreen, it's actually pretty interesting, I'd say. It's just not super powerful.
Comes with a one-year subscription to Office 365 Personal. That's the latest thing, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
And they're smart, because after a year, you're probably going to renew.
I think all these, you know, tablets are really interesting and good. And of course, you know, like you said, it's not going to do a huge amount. But I don't know. Am I alone in not being able to handle it not doing a lot? I see the benefit for students and stuff, but...
It's funny. I mean,
I want more.
I was in the day I got my replaced the trashed and tattered iPhone 6. There was a Tesla store and a Microsoft store in the place I was at. And the Tesla store was hysterical because there's like a Tesla and another Tesla and Tesla lunchboxes and Tesla T-shirts. And it was like, you know, it's just this bizarre kind of shopping experience where there's lots of Tesla branded crap. And then the car itself, which is obviously not crap. And then around the corner was a Microsoft store, and there's all these like $200, $250 Microsoft laptops from major vendors that are incredibly usable. And part of the reason they're creating these, you know, they're Atom based processors. They may or may not have a touchscreen. But despite the fact that their specs sound really tiny or make you think, netbook, run away. But because of the way Windows 8 is handling the memory and the fact that they've worked pretty hard on what they're doing inside these laptops, they're incredibly usable. Would I want to do like 70 megabyte photos in Photoshop? No. Would I want to edit video on them? No. Mm-hmm. For 98% of what most people are doing, they'll work fine.
And they do.
Micro USB charging, which is very interesting. I like that.
Yeah.
I wish it were Type C, but I think Type C isn't quite there. And so next generation. I noticed you're using the new Dell XPS 13.
This is actually the 2013 XPS 13.
Oh, the old one.
The new Dell XPS 13 is a fantastic piece of engineering. Sweet. It is gorgeous.
The only thing wrong with it is Windows.
Keyboard is fantastic. I'm okay with Windows.
You don't mind.
Although it's kind of funny. Nobody I work with currently run Windows, so I'm going to have to buy another MacBook so I can be the person that talks about the OS X stuff because nobody else will do it.
Everybody is running Windows.
How Everybody's running Windows or Linux.
So let me see your desktop, because you used to have a very bad habit of just putting icons like crazy on your desktop.
You know, I had just cleaned it up about a week ago.
Oh, Patrick,
no, this is very tame for me.
That's cleaned up. Yeah,
mine
it used to be
worse.
Just like full.
Yeah.
So you need a big screen just so you have more room for icons.
I spent about 6 months last year working on a 4K desktop. And the ironic thing is I had like six icons of the desktop and six applications open all the time. Like I did not have, icon cruft on my desktop.
Do you like that Asus? That's the new Transformer.
It's the 300 CHI. It feels really nice, and I'm deeply in love with the idea of a laptop. Now, of course, this is a convertible, right? So, keyboard comes separate from the.
You broke it again.
I did not break it.
You cannot give Patrick a notebook; it just rips the screen right off.
Not true, but I'm. It's really interesting to play around with the Core M processor.
So that's what's going to be in the new MacBook when it comes out in just this Friday.
Yeah.
What do you think? Is it really slow?
No, it is not really slow.
It's not.
You know, but I haven't done any benchmarking yet. I've just been using it hands-on, and I haven't run into any situation where I'm like, arr!
Yeah, see, I don't care about benchmarks. That's what I want to know. Am I going to scream because it's too slow?
No, you're not going to scream because it's too slow.
Mm-hmm. All right. Because that MacBook looks pretty sweet.
And it comes in gold.
You read my mind.
I mean, I didn't want it to. This is your lab. I was like, you know what? I want a gold laptop.
That's the one you should get.
Seriously? I've never had interest in a gold Apple or Android or anything. But for some reason, the idea of a gold laptop.
Disappointed in you, Patrick.
I don't know where it's coming from. I just remember looking at that and thinking, like, I want that. It's just so I can get that look when I'm on the
This is
the
Patrick.
Bus.
He has opulence.
Oh, yeah.
He loves gold.
Go climb out my opulent 2003 like Subaru that's parked out there.
So when DirecTV,
I hear the word gold and I run screaming.
I think I can has opulence is really the story. I also want a mini giraffe. If I can only get a mini giraffe, I'd be happy. That's me. That's me with my gold laptop. I has opulence. Are we gauche, Luria? Do you think or?
Are we gauche?
Patrick and me for liking gold.
The fact that you're already in the royal we at this point.
Well, you and me, not we.
I just think it's hysterical. Yeah. I just think it's really curious that all of a sudden that this weird set of color options that came out on the iPhone is suddenly available on the laptops.
Yeah, but I have to admit, I mean, the gold from Apple is not wretched. As much as I hate it, it's like...
It's not wretched.
It's a subtle gold.
Now, that's a pull quote for a box. Yeah. This gold is not wretched.
Not wretched.
Geek's Life.
Are you going to... So, if would you consider dating a guy with a gold laptop?
Well, my boyfriend has a gold iPhone.
Uh-huh. I'm just saying. Okay.
But it was the only option available.
Oh, right? Yeah, sure.
That's what he told you.
Yeah. I'm sorry, honey. I didn't have any choice.
Yeah, that was...
As long as we're talking hardware, did you see this? So at CES, Intel announced a new computer on a stick. Google is going to launch something that will be, they didn't say exactly the price, under $100, called the Chrome Bit Dongle, which is probably the worst name ever, but it does come in gold. It is a thing that you plug into your TV, has an HDMI port, kind of like...
Well, it's the same processor that are in the new Chromebook laptops. So basically, apparently, the keyboard, the touchpad, and the screen for the Chromebooks is worth $51 because this is going to sell. This is an Asus, Chromebook.
There is a $150 higher and Hisense Chromebook.
Right.
This is $50 less. Google's just said less than 100. We don't know exactly. I think that's too much. It should be 50 or less.
I heard it was more like 99.
That's less than 100, but barely, yeah.
Well, it's marketing.
I know, and I think anybody who watches a lot of Twit knows this already, but you fellas and gals don't. I did not like the Chromebook. I thought it was a stupid idea. And then lately I've been using a Chromebook Pixel and I kind of love it.
It's great for the simplicity. And,
it's expensive.
And as we all know,
it's not gold.
Yeah. It's not gold.
I like the Type C charging / data connector.
Good to know.
I think, that's a good choice. I'm not sure Apple's decision to make it the only connector is the right thing to do, but on the Pixel, you could do it. It's nice because there's two of them, one on each side, so you can put the power on any side. Mm-hmm. So that's very flexible. It still has USB ports and all that stuff, SD card.
The thing about the Pixel is it's just for what the Chromebook does, right? Isn't it? It's just a little too expensive. It's cheaper than the first Pixel, which I had some time to play around with. And I hated it. I hated it for what it represented because at that point, Chrome was so limited and you could do so very little with it. Now there are more offline apps and you can actually use Chrome like a real computer. But even
that's my point is that at first it was just a browser. I can now do almost anything I want to do. There are a few things that I couldn't do. I'm not going to edit videos about the one thing I can't do. But Adobe has announced they're going to do streaming Lightroom, server-side Lightroom. Photoshop. I'm hoping they're going to do Lightroom.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff that I couldn't do that is now supported. I couldn't write software in the past very well, but there's great solutions for that. So I feel like, and I really like it. I really, it's fast. I feel like people spend too little on their computers. Don't you think? What do you think, Gloria? Shouldn't they be spending more on their computer? No, I feel like sometimes what are we, nuts? $250 computer?
Yeah, that's nothing.
That's nuts.
It's nuts, but right, if the average family of four in the United States is making $40,000 to $60,000, it's not so nuts.
And also, if not everyone needs the high-end, like, media editing and stuff we geeks do.
Well, that's why Chromebook,
there's
$200 Chromebooks, we just talked about, there's $150 Chromebooks. But they're plasticky, and I don't know. I mean...
It's fine. It's fine. I've become like just like the Moto E. Like I've become a really big fan of the tech that's becoming more capable at lower price points. Because it's like we are being bombarded by so much other so much consumerism, like Amazon's freaking buy button. You know, it feels nice to see the tech coming down in price that's vaguely affordable by many people. And then you have the crazy high end stuff like the Pixel for crazy people. I don't know. Sorry, Leo.
I come from an era where the computer you wanted was always $2,500. Right, remember that?
Sure.
And $999 doesn't sound like that much to me for a really usable, really robust, very snappy, gorgeous high res screen, touch interface. It just feels like actually the right price.
It's still a fancy web browser though. Like no matter how you,
really fancy web.
It's a really nice web browser. Feels like a step back. I don't know.
I don't know. I think it's great.
I'd rather have a better computer and spend a little bit more on it rather than have multiple, have to get one simple computer and one computer for complicated editing and things like that. Right. I don't like switching back and forth between computers because I'm a hoarder of information and apps, and I want to have access to all my stuff as it is on my single computer. I don't like switching back and forth.
That's the amazing experience on a Chromebook, is you can wipe it off, you log into your Google account, and all your stuff is there all of a sudden. You haven't lost a thing.
Apps. I mean,
all the apps reinstall. There's a lot of apps now. There's very few things I can't do. That's true.
It has gotten
video editing's the one, and that's the one thing you do a lot. What do you use for your
edit? I haven't actually edited in a while, unfortunately. I want to get back into it because I love editing. My team is Dave Curley is an amazing editor.
Luria, let them do it.
I know, but it's fun.
No, it's not. You've deluded yourself because you had to do it. It's not fun.
They've switched to Premiere, though, from Final Cut.
So have we.
Yeah.
We went out because we were looking, and we decided not to buy the new Mac Pros. Our old Mac Pros were kind of feeling a little long in the tooth. And we decided, you know what? We're going to buy Dell PCs. And for the price, we got a much better hardware. It's and we're going to move to Premiere because it's Windows. Yeah. Hey, Anthony Nielsen is running the board because Jason Howell's the break this week today because it's Easter or something. I don't know. Anthony is a godless heathen, so he doesn't mind being here. You do a lot. You're mainly an editor.
Yeah.
How has that been, the transition from Final Cut to Premiere?
I mean, it's kind of like a lateral move from 7.
You had used Premiere before you came to us, right?
No, not really.
No? You were Final Cut all along.
My last gig I was doing, I moved over to 10.
Okay. You weren't using Avid or some other. Were. Emmy Award winning editor here. This guy's good. Yeah. And so you're okay. You don't feel let down. You had to learn something new, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty much the same as 7.
There you go.
Different. Yeah.
Except they did a lot of things about involving, I don't know, less expensive hardware, being able to work in groups, being able to manage workflow. I mean, it's so funny because Final Cut's like a perfect thing for somebody sitting in a corner making art. And then Premiere actually talked to people who made television on a large scale and built in a lot of stuff that Final Cut had never even really
thought about. We have six editors, six edit suites. Has anybody complained? Tell me their names. It's okay.
No, just like we have a few bugs that we're trying to work out. But.
I know. I think Josh's machine is haunted. Or his bird got into it.
Well, actually, today is his first time he's editing the tech guy on his PC. So
we'll see how it goes. Ooh, I'm a little nervous. All right, let's take a break. We got more with a great panel. But I don't want to keep you too late because I know something's waiting. Something wonderful.
Dinner.
That kind of thing. I know those people have to eat. Maybe some Easter eggs you didn't find this morning. Do you have kids, Devendra?
No. I have two cats, so they're all I've got right now.
Do you have an Easter egg hunt with your cats?
No, that would be hilarious.
You should totally YouTube
Easter egg hunt. Yeah.
If you do, meerkat it, would you? Our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. Lifesaver for me, Luria. When I was back in Toronto doing Call for Help, I had to invoice Rogers in Canadian every month.
Oh boy,
that's annoying.
I don't speak Canadian. And then they wanted I bought the plane ticket and the hotels, and they wanted me to expense it. And it was annoying because I hated doing it, firing up Word or Excel or whatever, and cranking out an invoice. And so I'd put it off, and so I'd go months without getting paid. And this was not fun, not to mention the fact that the bookkeepers at Rogers would say, you cannot give us 6 months of invoices at the same time.
Why not?
They don't like that.
They don't like that. So it was Amber MacArthur who said, maybe you should try FreshBooks. She was right. FreshBooks was actually, it was started in Toronto. Nice bunch of folks. And boy, they saved my life. They made it easy. They still do. 10 years later, there's still over 5 million users now. Use FreshBooks to send out invoices, to save time billing, to keep track of time and hours, to automatically import receipts. FreshBooks is built for the growing business, the freelancer or the small business that wants to get bigger. On average, FreshBooks customers double their revenue in the first 24 months. And this is the one I liked. Get paid on an average of 5 days faster. I got paid on the average of 6 months faster.
That's a big jump.
And they, and they do, by the way, handle Canadian. You can do any currency, which is really, really convenient. I can just go on and on. They've got great apps on Android and iOS. You can actually use the apps to record time and hours. It's so easy to bill. And when tax time comes, oh, man, your accountant's going to love you because these great reports make it very easy. Try FreshBooks right now. No obligation. 30 days free. FreshBooks.com/twit. If in the sign-up they say, how did you hear about us? Just put This Week in Tech, if you would. I'd appreciate that. Or twit. FreshBooks.com/twit. Saved my life, and I feel like I owe them a big debt of gratitude. By the way, their support is local from the FreshBooks offices in Toronto, and these are really nice people who really will help you. FreshBooks.com/twit. Callie, did you see that people are bending the Galaxy S6?
I did
see that. Stop it. Everything will bend if you put enough pressure on it. Stop it.
Something's break.
Everything will bend.
Something shatter.
I think it's awesome that here we are wanting flexible displays. We want this technology to move forward with our bendy screens, and then we yell at the companies trying to give it a little bit more bend.
Jeez. Jeez. Has anybody tried Riff? This is another Facebook app that has sunk without a trace. They have an incredible record at this point. Riff is an app we played with a little bit that lets you make a video and tag it, and then others in your group can add to that video and more and more and more. And Anthony, you were playing with it here. A lot of us here around were playing with it. But I think it's dead already. It's like 4 days old. It's like gone.
Yeah, there hasn't been much activity.
It's gone. It's gone, gone?
No, you can still download it, but remember Facebook did poke? What did they do? I don't even remember that Facebook...
I think you can still poke people.
Yes, you can. Thank you.
I'm going to go on Facebook and do that.
There was paper. The paper wasn't so bad. I like paper.
I don't remember paper.
Nobody remembers it. Facebook, hello? Nothing.
Pillow?
Hello? Pillow? Oh. I don't know.
I made a phone, guys. Remember that?
Oh, yeah, because Google Wave really worked out so well long term.
Yeah. How about this? You're a parent, Patrick. You're the only parent. I'm a parent, but my kids are grown. The scrapbook that lets your kid have a Facebook presence.
Yeah.
You think that's a good idea?
My 7-year-old needs to be on Facebook.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to do this either.
Mm-hmm.
For the first time.
I'm not a parent, but I think the scrapbook seems pretty cool for parents to be able to do that. But they said that they were looking into figuring out how when a kid turns 13, they can take over.
Of course.
That scrapbook.
Yes.
But no 13-year-old in the history of 13-year-olds is ever going to want their kid pictures, their baby pictures on their profile.
Mom, can I put my baby book online?
But when they turn 25 or 30, they probably would want to combine that. So I think they have to put a little bit more thought in that.
You can opt to co-own the scrapbook with a partner with whom you are in a relationship on Facebook. Facebook is like a nanny. Oh, no, you're not in a relationship. You could choose. You can have a tag. You could choose what you call the tag, your child's name, initials, whatever you want. Bozo, anything. You and your partner choose which photos to tag. Only you and your partner can tag your child in photos.
I think this is just going to help guarantee an entire generation. Because, first of all, like Facebook is already the place where you hang out when you have to talk to your relatives, right? It's not where you hang out with your friends. Right. And this will, like,
or in my case, other Screensavers alumna.
Okay, you know, okay. Another good example. But again, you know, if it's just like guaranteeing that no one after a certain birth date is going to hang out on Facebook except to talk mm-hmm. to their parents or deal with their like aunts and uncles.
Did you use you were at Ziff Davis when we were using Lotus Notes for email, right?
Yes.
Most painful period I can ever remember.
No. So, Lotus Notes was not the most painful period.
It wasn't fun, though. You liked Lotus Notes?
I had been using it for so long at that point, it no longer bothered me.
It was the official email of Ziff Davis.
It was the official pain in my ass at Ziff Davis, but it was one of many.
But it predated, you know, like widespread internet mail. So
sure.
It was company mail. It was group. It was also created before the United States allowed you to export crypto that actually worked.
Oh, yeah, because crypto's a munition.
Yeah. So here's how they solved it at Lotus. They got permission to export 64-bit crypto, which is pretty strong, as long as the first 24 bits were the NSA's public key. Then the NSA would only have, you know, what is it, 40 bits, which is nothing. They could take an old 8088 and solve that one. And everybody else would get a 64-bit key space that really, it wasn't really 64 bits. So a fella has reverse engineered, I love this, has reverse engineered it and has discovered the public key for the NSA that was in Lotus Notes. Its name was Mini Truth. The organizational name was Mini Truth. And the common name was Big Brother. And he's, you got the joke now, because the Ministry of Truth, or Mini Truth, in 1984 mm-hmm. was what Big Brother kept an eye on people with.
At least they've got a sense of humor.
Or had.
He says, I saw this in my debugger late one night, and it was spooky. So there you go. Even the NSA has a sense of humor.
Had.
A sense of humor. The Mini Truth, Big Brother.
User ID, Director, NSA.
Was it?
Scroll all the way down to the bottom.
Oh, you're right. User ID, Director, NSA, DIRNSA at NSA.gov.
Oh, man.
Yep, there you go.
If only we could see Snowden's expression when he learns. It's like, ah!
For all we know, that's what set him off. Yeah. It's like, that's it. I'm telling everybody. Let's see what else. Elon Musk makes one tweet, gains $1 billion in value. That must be nice work if you can get it. Mm-hmm. He tweeted out on March 30th that there will be a major, speaking of Tesla, major new, they're going to have two things to have in the store now, a major new Tesla product line, not a car, April 30th they'll unveil it. You think it's a Tesla plane?
No.
A Tesla hang glider?
No. I'm pretty sure it's a cat scratcher post.
It's a Voltron tech cat. People speculate it's a battery.
Yeah, like a home battery.
Mm-hmm. Right. What would that mean?
That Tesla has a market to place all of the batteries they're making at the Super Center in Reno.
They built this basically incredible battery factory.
So basically you can store solar energy locally on your house.
See, okay, so right now what you do if you most people don't store solar energy, right? You just sell it back to the power company. Right. So the solar panels,
you stuff it back into the
just
power
gets
grid.
Stuffed back down the line in the grid and you get a credit on your bill. But that doesn't give you self-sufficiency. What you'd like is 300 lead acid batteries in your basement.
I am really down with being off grid, but managing a whole collection of rolls, traction batteries, which requires like basic, yeah, I mean, it's not, if something goes wrong, if you do it right, it's probably not going to go wrong. But if something goes wrong, it's a really bad scene.
Like, but that's true of lithium ion too, right?
Yes, but either way, but you can, you know, the
anything that stores a lot of energy
yes.
has the potential to suddenly release right. all that energy.
But it gets much more in theory, in speculating, if there is a box I can bolt to my house that they have figured out how to keep from exploding when it gets rolled 17 times on a highway and runs into a bridge.
That's
embankment.
True.
Probably don't have to worry about one of my sons hitting with a ball peen hammer. Right.
See, okay. So now I'm interested in this. Okay. This would be for solar power to store it.
That's the theory.
And it would have a lot of capacity?
Or? It could also be a watch. We won't know until the 30th. It could be a gold-plated Tesla. We won't know until the 30th. But I like the idea that if they're going to build this giant battery factory in Reno, which is just down the street, it would be cool if they did something that would take this incredible potential, just having all these batteries and being able to drop the scale, because it's just incredibly inefficient. If you have a global power grid, the idea of shipping power during the day from this part of the world that is, you know, underneath the sun to this part of the world that is dark is really, really cool. But right now, there's just no particularly effective way to store energy when the sun is not shining.
That's the only thing, by the way, that keeps me we live in a place that'd be great for solar power. Sure. I get a lot of sun. I've got a roof that faces in the right direction. Actually, somebody told me, don't put them on the roof because you can't wash them off. You can't hose them off. So put it somewhere where you can go to keep them clean. So I have actually a hillside that would also work.
Must be nice. Yeah. They're on the roof or they're not going anywhere in my house. Yeah. And I'll just put a hose on a stick.
Get on a ladder, wash them off. But I want to store it. I don't want to just sell it back to the grid right away. I want to have, because we're on well. If I could have, you know, the pump on the well work, then I could just put a big fence around the house.
I was going to say, where's your zombie fence?
And then I could leave. I could leave and I could just check in and never check out.
Well, but you can do that now currently. You just have to have, you know, big banks of batteries and make sure those are, you know, maintained and taken care of in the controller system.
I think the bigger story here is the fact that he got any traction out of Twitter. Why aren't we talking about that?
A billion. Well, we've seen it before. Who was it that... he tweeted about his water. Was it Jay-Z or somebody tweeted that, and he made $1 billion and he didn't even get in trouble.
Well, that's impressive.
Yeah.
1.9 million followers.
Yeah. That's what happens.
It probably helps at scale.
So I have 500,000 followers. Maybe I could make $500 million.
You know, there's a thin line between self-promotion and going to prison. So just be careful in what you promote. Like
May 30th, we're going to announce the most exciting product that Twit has ever launched.
But only if you send a dollar right now.
Ooh, yeah. I like that. You're working both sides. Both sides. So one last story, and this is why I want to build a zombie fence around the house and get off the grid. The Large Hadron Collider is operating again.
Yes!
Did you know that it was out of... You knew, because you're kind of a geek.
Kind of.
Since 2013, because they wanted to double the power... This seems like such a bad
idea. We're going to have a black hole. The Earth is going to get sucked into it. We're all going to... No, I joke because a couple friends of mine, one of my wife's best friends has a PhD in physics, and she's just going to say horrible things to me if she hears me say things like that. So
yeah.
I do not believe that.
It's not a black hole generator, probably.
Yes.
this morning at 10:41, a proton beam was back in their 27-kilometer ring, the most amazing science experiment in all of history. Then at 12:27 this afternoon, this is, of course, Geneva time, a second beam rotating in the opposite direction. The beam circulated at their injection energy of 450
gigawatts.
GeV. They're going to check all systems. Then they're going to increase the beam power. And this will allow them to... This literally doubled the amount of juice they can fire in this thing.
Just trying so hard not to make a Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man joke right now.
Double season one, 6.5 TeV per beam is the final goal, with a 13 TeV proton-proton collisions expected before summer. He's like, you got a month. And then it says, this is the blog post from the CERN labs. The LHC experiments will soon be exploring uncharted territory.
Dun, 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 dun.
The Braut-Englert-Higgs mechanism, dark matter, antimatter, quark-gluon plasma. This is how you make zombies. They're going to literally, this will be the first, this will be our attempt to get past the standard model of physics and to come up with a unified field theory and black holes for everyone that will power your house.
I'm just looking at the list of Large Hadron Collider experiments.
Oh, it's so cool. Yeah. This is, in all seriousness, this is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Good reminder to watch Particle Fever, documentary.
Yes, about, if you want to know what it's all about, And it's on Netflix. It's free right now.
Yep.
Watch it. Devendra Hardawar, so great to have you in Gadget.com. Don't forget Slash Film, his wonderful movie podcast.
We just did the Furious 7 review, and I love that movie so much.
So you
no spoilers.
Yeah, Patrick also big Fast and Furious fan.
Enjoy. Bring a box of tissues. That's all I can tell you.
Oh, no.
That's all I've heard.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, don't tell me Bumblebee is going to die.
Wrong car franchise?
Oh. Yeah. Never mind.
We mock what we don't understand, Leo.
I've never seen a single Fast and Furious.
Start with the Tokyo one. You'll love it.
Tokyo Drift. Should I start with number one, though? Shouldn't I? Yes, I mean,
I saw number one when this whole series started back in, what, 99? Or it was late
back
90s.
Back when you were 12?
Has it been that long? I was, 17 going into college, I guess. But it was like, that was a fun little movie. But what they did with Tokyo Drift in the fourth one, the fifth one especially, with Justin Lin coming in and turning this series into like a comic book action movie franchise, kind of amazing what they did. I think every geeky person out there would love this series because it's so in-depth and so geeky.
Speaking of geeks, Glenn, who sits over here, is our marketing guy and a wonderful guy, says, you watch them in this order: 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 3, 7.
I mean, sort of. I would like to pretend number two doesn't exist, but it's not a very good, even in the spectrum of Fast and Furious movies, two is not a very good movie. So
they just drive really fast and spin around, and
it's about family, Leo. Oh. It's about family. And
ironically, it is.
Yeah, it is.
The nature of relationships and truth within them.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I'm with you, Leo. I haven't watched a single one, so.
They're so good.
Well, in that case, you'll want to watch their podcast about Better Call Saul.
Yes.
That's another also, one. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a separate podcast we do at Slash Film with my co-host David Chen, but that series has been great, too. So watch the show. Check
I
out
just
that.
Love the development of this guy. I'm not going to say anything more, but I just think it's very interesting. He starts out as a parking attendant.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. All right, Slash Film, which is at slashfilm.com, which is amazing. Mm-hmm.
The Slash Film cast at slashfilm.com.
Yeah.
Nice.
Spoiler. Spoiler, do not go there.
No spoilers in the titles. We're okay.
Oh, the title's not a spoiler?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty sure we knew Paul Walker.
Is The Rock in Fast and Furious?
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
And so is Jason Statham in this movie. It is
I love
like
Jason Statham.
Yeah, everything I love about action movies just like kind of molded into one franchise.
Do I need to watch 1 through 6 to see?
You should. Yes. I would recommend watching 1, but you could watch 4, 5, and 6. And 5 is the best one. One of the best action movies in the past few decades. Just an incredible action movie.
Wow.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I thought it was just crap.
No.
I really did. I thought, oh, this is just crap. I'm not going to watch this movie. I'm going to go see the Academy Award
winning. They said that about the Battleship Potemkin,
foreign
too.
Film Ida, which is in Polish and black and white and 4x3.
So well.
I'm just going to watch that. Instead, I should have watched Fast and Furious 7.
You know, we mock what we don't understand, Leo. Keep mocking.
Yeah, there you go.
And you're going to watch it, and you're going to weep.
Lisa's
call
a huge
Devendra
fan. No, Lisa's a huge fan. She loves these shows. She loves explosions. Sometimes she's in the gym, and I'm down the hall, and I think the whole house is blown up.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She turns
did
it up.
Did you like The Road Warrior, Leo?
I did like Mad Max.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I think Fast Five has done, like, for car action movies, has done something, like, on that level of insanity. And 6 was a lot of fun as well, but I think 7 even takes it to another level. So you should check them out at some point.
I'm going to take the week off, ladies and gentlemen. I'll see you next week. I'm going to watch all 7 Fast and Furious.
Enjoy.
Just in time for the new
Mad Max
movie.
Actually, we kind of had a little Fast and Furious action over the last couple of days because I rented 6 Segways, and we terrorized San Francisco.
Somebody sent out a tweet that was like, did I just see the entire Twit crew go buying Segways?
Yep. I'm going to buy one. I love them. Callie, Luria Petrucci, one of these days I'm going to call you right.
Hey,
Louie.
You know what? It's gonna happen for a while.
Louie, you're the greatest. Geekslife.com, everybody should go there. They should sign up. They should join. Do you have a Patreon as well?
Yes. Patreon.com/geekslife.
Are you gonna? Is that how you're gonna support it? Or are you gonna do advertising? What are you gonna do?
Well, right now we're doing advertising, but, you know, idealistically, I would love to get to a point and find a way to make it fully community supported.
That's what all the kids are doing now.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's interesting because now is the prime time for that. People are now becoming willing to pay for the things that they love and enjoy. And like I said earlier, you know, we're looking at doing some community stuff that will get people more involved as audience members. But that's where it lies these days, you know, and I love the advertisers who have supported us. But wouldn't it be awesome if we could do that? That would be freaking fantastic. Yeah. So we're going to look at ways to incorporate that a little bit more.
When we started Twit, I would have loved to have done this. There just weren't the mechanisms to do it this way, frankly. And and I would have just had to spend, you know, hours begging on every episode.
We did pretty good when you launched the tip jar.
It was okay. It was like at most it got to like 8,000 or 9,000 a month.
I love how that's okay in your world.
Well, it's okay but that's okay to do one or two shows. But you're not going to build this. You're not going to do, and we do, how many shows? I don't even know, 25 shows. You can't do that on a tip jar yet. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although, Callie, you're doing quite well. It looks like you've got 339 patrons and already almost $7,000 a month.
That's huge.
But before people go crazy and say, well, I'm not getting very any money, she's got 7,000. Remember that Jack takes like 5 of it. So Jack's just going to take almost all of it. She's going to see $120. So give more. Give more.
Well, you know, I mean, obviously there are costs involved to run that site.
That sounds like a lot of money. It is for one person.
Right. And again, we have a whole team and we have a host of hosts. So we've got several shows that we're going to be running. My Tech Whisperer, Hipster and the Geek. We've got, you know, David, who is doing, you know, music and other tech stuff. We've got Giovanni, who's doing photography, Dave Curley, who's actually doing movies as well. And maybe you can join us on there for that show. That would be great. And then, you know, we've got Damani, who's doing kind of fashion stuff and event technology. So a range of passions. I'll definitely be out on the water this summer talking about stand-up paddleboarding.
Do you do paddleboard yoga ever?
I do, actually. That's a lot of fun.
Crazy. I see people on the river doing like Warrior 2 on a paddleboard.
Paddleboards are pretty stable, Leo.
Are they?
Yeah.
They are. You have to get out on one because you unless you're doing tricks out there, like trying to get yourself.
For me, a trick would be standing up.
No.
It's a lot like standing on a dock, Leo.
Oh. So it's not like a surfboard, because I'm thinking it's like a surfboard where it's hard. I could never get up on a surfboard because it's going like this all the time.
No, they're not like really that. Stable. Oh. They're meant to hold.
What's
like,
the point then?
To walk on water.
Okay.
Yeah, no, you just get out there. It can be either a really relaxing time out on the water and you can take it slow, or it can be the best workout of your life.
Should I try this?
You should.
Should
you ever see a really fat old guy on a paddleboard?
Yes,
in a bow tie.
Patrick, no. I'm counting on you getting him out there, okay?
I'll do this. You know who does it? Becky Worley also does it, and she's been trying to get Lisa to go out. And I thought, well, it's not for me because I can't stand up on a surfboard.
You can stand up on a paddleboard.
All right.
If you can stand on a sidewalk, you can stand on a paddleboard.
I like a Segway. It balances for you. Geeks Life is on Patreon at patreon.com/geekslife. Patrick Norton is also doing, I think you're doing pretty well on the Patreon as well.
Getting there.
Yeah.
He's doing great.
Yeah.
Patreon.com/
Tech Thing. TekThing.
And that's where you can go to see Patrick and Snubs and their tech thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm really glad. This is Jack Conte did this of Pamplemousse.
Yeah.
And I think it's really become a very powerful way for individuals to go out and do their own thing, which is great.
It's kind of neat to be doing this without I've been doing this inside of large companies for so long. Now I get
own
to solve all
stuff.
The problems myself, whether I want to or not.
No, but it's
which
fine.
Which is strangely liberating.
Yeah, own your own stuff. I think you should. We're thinking about taking one of our shows and just saying, look, we're going to cut them off. But if you want to save them, go to patreon.com.
This is starting to sound like an episode of Survivor.
Lisa,
support
bring
the golden chariot
the dog
of hate.
Gets it. I don't know. I'm thinking just to see how that works. Obviously, we couldn't do the whole Twit Network on Patreon, but one show.
That's how it starts.
We're going to take the weakest show.
Just a taste.
You are the weakest link and put it on there. Don't worry. Twitch is safe.
I got to call Ryan.
You know what? Twitch does really well. That's a good show. Well,
good.
You guys are doing great. I love it. Don't ever leave.
Good.
Do we pay you to do that?
Yes.
Oh, good. Okay.
Feel free to check in. You know, perhaps it's time to discuss my compensation.
I think we should talk about
Ryan's
paying you a
having
little bit
a baby. The Kentucky lost, but he's
did
having
Kentucky
a baby.
Lose?
Kentucky lost.
Oh,
to
no.
Wisconsin. Yeah, we shouldn't talk about that.
Oh, I bet he's very sad.
It apparently was a very quiet ride back to Kentucky.
Wow.
From Indiana after the loss.
Devendra, do you have a Patreon?
I do not.
Okay.
No, I haven't done any of that. I do. We get tips from the podcast and stuff, and that's all.
That's great.
It's all very nice and interesting. It's nice that people support, people who are creating things. I think that's great now.
No, I think it's kind of amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a really
it used
good
to be that way. That's no? for sure. When we all first started this, it was people were anxious to get it for free, and now that the tech has evolved and the community has evolved, as we pay app for developers for apps on our phones, mm-hmm. We also are paying creators for the things that we enjoy, which is amazing.
I think for the time being, we're going to stick with our model because it works. But
fix it.
But I think that there are shows that would be probably well suited to that model. We did it with OMG Craft. We have a Minecraft show. Chad Johnson did a great job. He's got it on YouTube. But it wasn't going to be a show that was going to do well on our network because, frankly, the people who watch Twit weren't really into Minecraft. But he's taken it to Patreon and done great.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really, really pleased with that. And I think that's a good model for the future. Devendra, Patrick, Luria, thank you so much. It's been great doing the show with you. Always fun to see you all again. Please come back soon, okay?
Thank you.
Thanks, Leo. Always blessed.
Easter is even Easter. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. That's 2200 UTC. Please stop by. We'd love it if you would watch live because that interactivity is great for my ego. It also helps us, respond to your questions and thoughts. But if you can't watch live, and I understand, we do, of course, make on-demand versions of all our shows available at twit.tv. That's our website. Or everywhere you can get podcasts, including, and I know most of you do this now, the podcast app of whatever stripe on your mobile device. And we also have Twit apps. We didn't do them. Great third-party Twit apps on every platform, including iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Roku. Please, whatever app you prefer to use, check it out and download one of those great apps. Those folks do a good job of those apps. Thanks for joining us. If you want to be in studio, as I mentioned, we're being a little stricter about in studio. It'd be good if you just didn't wander in. We'd like you to email tickets at twit.tv. Does a couple of things. Make sure we have enough room for you. We put out a chair for you. We have a nice bagel under your seat. No, don't look under your seat. There's no bagel. But we do love it if you're here. Tickets at twit.tv. Let us know. We are, I should say, sold out for the April 19th show, our 10th anniversary show.
Wow.
More than full. In fact, what we've done is we've created a waiting list. So if you had asked for tickets for our 10th anniversary show on April 19th, and you know you can't make it, please let us know. Just email tickets at twit.tv so that we can release your seat or seats to somebody who's on the waiting list. We're actually waiting listing people now because we just the fire marshal won't let us put a million people in here. It's going to be fun.
It's
getting
exciting.
Custom director's chairs made.
Really?
For everybody, yeah. Kevin Rose, Patrick Norton, David Prager, Robert Herron, John C. Dvorak, it's going to be the panelists that were on the first few episodes of Twit.
Roger Chang.
Roger Chang is a maybe.
Well, he just had a baby.
Can you put some pressure on him?
I'll see what I can do.
We got him a chair.
You ever tried to pressure Roger?
No, I know. That's
it's
why
like
I'm just leaving
a
him alone.
It
I don't want
Changri
really to happen. But, Roger has a new baby. I understand he can't make it. But, Devendra, you want to come in and just do Roger Chang?
I'll come in whatever, guys. Come around.
Are you in New York? Or where are you based?
I am. I'm in Brooklyn right now.
Okay. Nice place to be. I hear it's wonderful great pizza.
We do. We have amazing pizza.
Luria, you're still in Dallas, right? You haven't left Dallas?
Correct. Okay. Dallas.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time. Another Twit is in the can. Bye-bye. I am off to watch 7 Fast and Furious movies.